ಯಂಶುಪಾಲ ಪರಮಂಸ ಪರಿಭ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಸ್ತೋತ್ರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯಶರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ಯಲೀಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿಭ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಸದಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹಾರಾಜ ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಕಿ ಅನಂತಗೋಡಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶೀಲ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋವ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾ ಗುಂಡಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನ್ ಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಾಯಾಪುರ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮ್ ಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿ ಕಿ ತುಳಸಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ದೇವಿ ಕಿ ಸಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೌರ್ ಪ್ರೇಮನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರು ಅಂಡ್ ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಾಂಶುಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸಾಯ ಭೂದಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣಿ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತಿ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ಪಾರ್ಥಾಯ ಪ್ರತಿಬೋಧಿತಾಂ ಭಗವತಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣೇನ ಸ್ವಯಂ ವ್ಯಾಸೇನ ಗ್ರಥಿತಾಂ ಪುರಾಣ ಮುನಿನಾಂ ಮಧ್ಯೆ ಮಹಾಭಾರತಂ ಅದ್ವೈತಾಮೃತವರ್ಷಿಣಿ ಭಗವದಿ ಅಷ್ಟಾದಶಾಧ್ಯಾಯಿನಿ ಮಂ ಬತ್ವಾಮನುಸಂಧದಾಮಿ ಭಗವದ್ಗೀತೆ ಭವದ್ವೇಷಿಣಿ ನಮೋಸ್ತು ದೇವ್ಯಾಸ ವಿಶಾಲ ಬುದ್ಧೇ ಕುಲ ಅರವಿಂದಾಯತ ಪತ್ರ ನೇತ್ರ ಯೇನ ತ್ವಯಾ ಭಾರತ ತೈಲಪೂರ್ಣ ಪ್ರಜ್ವಾಲಿತೋ ಜ್ಞಾನಮಯ ಪ್ರದೀಪ ಪ್ರಪನ್ನ ಪಾರಿಜಾತಾಯ ಸ್ತೋತ್ರವೇ ತ್ರೈತವಾಣೇ ಜ್ಞಾನಮುದ್ರಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಗೀತಾಮೃತ ದುಹೇ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವೋಪನಿಷದೋ ಗಾವೋ ದೋಕ್ತಾ ಗೋಪಾಲ ನಂದನ ಪಾರ್ಥೋ ವಲ್ಸ ಸುಧೀರ್ಭೋಕ್ತಾ ದುಗ್ಧಂ ಗೀತಾಮೃತಂ ಮಹತ್ ವಸುದೇವ ಸುತಂ ದೇವಂ ಕಂಸಚಾನೂರಮರ್ದನಂ ದೇವೀ ಪರಮಾನಂದಂ ಕೃಷ್ಣಂ ವಂದೇ ಜಗದ್ಗುರುಂ ಭೀಷ್ಮದ್ರೋಣದಟಾ ಜಯದ್ರಥ ಜಲಾ ಗಾಂಧಾರ ನೀಲೋಲ್ಪಲ ಶಲ್ಯಗ್ರಾಹವತಿ ಕೃಪೇಣ ವಹನೀ ಕರ್ಣೇನ ವೇಲಾ ಕುಲ ಅಶ್ವತ್ಥಾಮೋ ವಿಕರ್ಣ ಘೋರಮಗರಾ ದುರ್ಯೋಧನಾವರ್ತಿನಿ ಸೋತೀರ್ಣ ಖಲು ಪಾಂಡವೈರಣ ನದೀ ಕೈವರ್ತಕ ಕೇಶವ ಪಾರಾಶರ್ಯವಜ ಸರೋಜಮಲಂ ಗೀತಾರ್ಥಗಂಧೋಲ್ಕಟಂ ನಾನಾಖ್ಯಾನಕೇಸರಂ ಹರಿಕಥಾ ಸಂಬೋಧನ ಬೋಧಿತಂ ಲೋಕೈ ಸಜ್ಜನ ಶಲ್ಪತೆ ಅಹರಹ ಪೇವೀಯಮಾನಂ ಮುದಾ ಭೂಯಾತ್ ಭಾರತ ಮಂಗಜ ಕಲಿಮಲ ಪ್ರಧ್ವಂಸಿನ ಶ್ರೇಯಸೇ ಮೂಗಂ ಕರೋದಿ ವಾಜಾಲಂ ಪಂಗಂ ಲಂಘಯದೇ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯಲ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಪರಮಾನಂದ ಮಾಧವಂ ಯಂ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ವರುಣೇಂದ್ರ ರುದ್ರ ಮರುದಸ್ತ್ವನ್ವಂದಿ ದಿವ್ಯೈ ಸವೈರ್ವೇದೈ ಸಾಂಗಪದೇ ಕ್ರಮ ಉಪನಿಷದೈರ್ಗಾಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಸಾಮಗಾಃ ಧ್ಯಾನಾವಸ್ಥಿತದ್ಗದೇನ ಮನಸಾ ಪಶ್ಯಂತಿ ಯಂ ಯೋಗಿನೋ ಯಸ್ಯಾಂತಂ ನ ವಿದುಸುರಾಸುರಗಣೈ ದೇವಾಯ ತಸ್ಮೈ ನಮಃ ಸರ್ವತ್ರ ಗೋವಿಂದ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಗೋವಿಂದ ಗೋವಿಂದ So, these verses from 7 onwards is what they call as the jnana sadhana, sadhana processes, what one should cultivate. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, shandi, arjavam, ajari, upasanam, shaujam, those 5 verses. Sairyam, alpavinigraha, indriyarteshu, vairagyam, anahangaramevacha. ಜನ್ಮ ಮೃತ್ಯು ಜರಾವ್ಯಾಧಿ ದುಃಖದೋಷಾನುದರ್ಶನ ಅಸಕ್ತಿ ಅನಭಿಷ್ವಂಗ ಪುತ್ರದ್ದಾರ ಗೃಹಾದಿಷು ನಿತ್ಯಂಜ ಸಮಚಿತ್ತತ್ವ ಇಷ್ಟಾನಿಷ್ಟೋಪತ್ತಿಷು ಮೈಜಾನನ್ಯ ಯೋಗೇನ ಭಕ್ತಿರವ್ಯಭಿಜಾರಿಣಿ ಅವ್ಯಭಿಜಾರಿಣಿ ವಿವಿಕ್ತ ದೇಶಸೇವಿತ್ವ ಅರದಿರ್ ಜನಸಂಸದಿ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮಜ್ಞಾನ ನಿತ್ಯತ್ವ ತತ್ವಜ್ಞಾನಾರ್ಥ ದರ್ಶನ ಏದಲ್ ಜ್ಞಾನಂ ಇತಿ ಪ್ರೋಕ್ತಂ ಅಜ್ಞಾನಂ ತದನನ್ಯಥ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪುಡ್ಡೇ ಲಾಸ್ಟ್ comment on that. He says, Edal jnanam iti proktam. All what I have spoken is knowledge, Krishna says. Everything else is ajnanam tadananyata. Everything else is ajnanam. So that is how Krishna spoke this jnana sadhana. As we saw yesterday, we are discussing about amanitvam. Amanitvam means that manam, that assumed personality about ourselves, whom what we think, who we are, and that false identification with the body as a jiva. And we saw the examples how some personalities manage to become free from that. It is a difficult thing, but it is there in everybody, and it will act. When it, you touch that, immediately you will get hurt. This assumed personality. If you touch that, you will get hurt. So that is why in society, normal system is, you respect my ego, I respect your ego. This is how society runs. So as long as you don't hurt each other, you can stay in this world. But once you touch the ego, then you get hurt. You won't like it, and obviously you will resist, and ahankaram will take over at that time. So this ahankaram, its very nature, it's like that. If you want to understand more about ahankaram, Viveka Chudamani talks about it in detail, what ahankaram means. Ahankara grahan mukta swarupam upabadhyate chandravat vimalam purnam sadananda swayam prabha. One of the verses in the Viveka Chudamani talks about ahankaram in this way. Ahankara graha mukta swarupam upabadhyate chandrat vimalapurnam chandravat vimalapurnam sadananda swayam prabha. What he is saying is that when one becomes free from ahankaram, like the moon comes from the Rahu during the lunar eclipse, when the Rahu eclipses on the moon, and when the moon gets released from the ahankaram, from the moon released from the Rahu, in a similar way, when we become free from our ego, we get our real nature, which is Sachidanandam nature, right? And we become pure, infinite, ever blissful and self-luminous. That is what in the Viveka Chudamani talks about this, one of the verses about the ahankaram. Ahankaram grahan mukta swarupam upabadhyate chandravat vimalapurnam sadananda swayam prabha. So this is the ahankaram, is the issue we are talking about, amanitvam. That ahankaram's first step is this amanitvam. So two ways, we were saying yesterday also, there are two ways how to destroy this ahankaram inside. There are two ways. One, what Krishna has spoken to Uddhava in the Bhagavatam, which was Nishtido Motrido Vai Bhudeva Pralambida Shrayaskama Krishrakada Altman Altmanam Uddharel. Uddhava, there is no other way except you face the world will teach you, and it will disturb you, it will destroy your ego, and that way, Nishtido Motrido Vai, people may pass urine and a stool on you, but still, Altman Altmanam Uddharel, you have to look after your real self in order to get rid of this ahankaram from inside. The second option, what you were saying was that, so that's the first option, that means through vicharam process, one continuously thinking about the power of this ahankaram and how ahankaram is destroying us every moment. In our keeping this ahankaram, there is no point in practicing bhakti. It is not going to work. It's just a waste of time. So ahankaram has to get destroyed. And that is what Krishna is saying, that first thing itself is this ahankaram. The second option what one has is, if a situation comes in life, in our family life or material life, if a favorable situation comes, then learning to adjust the life accordingly. Sometimes Maya gives you some tough times in life and it will hurt your ego, and in that situation you will notice that Mahatmas and great devotees, they know that manam is not important. Whatever the material life has thrown at them, they are hurt, and their material life is completely destroyed by that. So if situation favorable for destroying the ahankaram comes in life, right? So there are examples for that. Many, many great devotees. Devotees' life, to understand all these qualities, best thing is to look into devotees' life, great devotees' life. and from there you will learn that. Yeah. So you can see there that the Tyagaraja, for example, Tyagaraja, who Ramachandra's great devotee he was, yeah, and he will stay home, he won't do any work, and there was a joint family, his brother's family, Tyagaraja also had his family, they all lived together. And he, most of the time, Tyagaraja Swamiji chanted the Ramachandra's name, completely all the time. Something like 96 crores time he has chanted Ramachandra's name in life, right? So, and his elder brother who had the responsibility of running the home, he will always criticize him for not finding some way to earn some money. And being Brahmanas, they have also difficulty to go and do any kind of work. Generally, they are accustomed to using yajnam, yagam, homam and things like that, or teaching Veda Bhadashala. And these are the main occupations what they had. So, even though his brother told him many times, no change in him, he was not going to go out and do anything for that. So, every day he used to chant lakhs and lakhs of names of Ramachandra. And that was his sadhana for that, right? And he didn't even know about this world. He was not bothered what goes on in the world, right? And his brother knew Vedam, his elder brother. He knew Vedam, right? And also he had some knowledge of the astrology and things related to that. So from all that, he was able to bring some money home. And with that, he will have to share with his family and Tyagaraja's family as well, right? So, looking after devotees and sadhakas, it's a very difficult thing, because it's no point in talking about the family for that. There also, his brother was also finding it very, very, very difficult, right? So, somebody suggested to his brother that once Tyagaraja gets married, he'll feel more responsible, and that may solve the problem. So they got him married as well, right? And the girl was born after the marriage, right? So what happened now? Tyagaraja, his wife and the daughter all together started chanting the holy name at home. Nothing else, right? And the elder brother had to feed all of them now. So continuously he was criticizing Tyagaraja, his brother, and at the same time Tyagaraja will go back and sit in front of Ramachandra's deity and complain to Ramachandra what's happening in life for him, right? And he wrote a lot of famous kirtanam in Carnatic music. Famous kirtanam he has written addressing Ramachandra about his problems in life. And Ramachandra won't answer anything, right? So sometimes he could have gone outside and done something to earn some money, but he wouldn't do that. And Amanitam, right? All three of them will sit together, and ultimately the brother decided that they had the ancestral property, so naturally they had to do a partition, and he thought that he will hand over his share and release him from any more further problems. So he thought that after that it is up to him how he wants to earn his living, and passed on the responsibility to him, right? So he gave his share of the property and told him to look after himself, and his brother withdrawn from the family responsibility all, right? But the problem with the devotees and those who are serious about spiritual life is they will never become serious about material responsibility. It is difficult for them, right? Because they think that it is Krishna's duty to look after them. That is how they are. The devotees are so surrendered, proper devotees we are talking about. They have such faith in Krishna's protection, power of protection, that they'll think that we are sitting here, Krishna should provide us the food. And in this way, they don't have the responsibility on their heads, right? So, as soon as he wakes up in the morning, and what he decided to do was, he got a copper pot, which has got two holes on the top, and through that he strung one rope and put it on his neck, and this copper pot in front of the chest, like this. Chanting Ramchandra's name, he will go house to house, asking for something, some grains or dal or something like that. And in them days, Tyagaraja's time, in them days, the families, all the women were at home. They were not working, they were at home. Families were there. So naturally, when Brahmana comes for a bhiksha, they will give something, whatever they can. At least a handful of rice was offered to them, which is a bhiksha. So Tyagaraja Swamiji used to collect a bhiksha like that. But he won't spend too much time. He will see if the pot is sufficient for him for that day, that's enough. He will stop there because he doesn't have any more time left. He'll come back home with that collected grains. This is how he collected his bhiksha, right? So, what they call it is Unchavruti. That's what's called Unchavruti, right? So, Amanitvam, because of this Amanitvam in him, he had no fear of anything. And only if it is necessary, he will ask for a bhiksha. So, it was his nature like that. He didn't bother about himself, that what the world thinks about him. He is more busy with Ramachandra rather than the world. So therefore, you can learn from Tyagaraja's life that one for whom this ahangaram is not a problem. He will go out when he wants with this copper pot in the front, and will collect as much grains or dal, whatever they have put it in, enough to survive, just to quench the hunger for him, wife and the child. He will bring it home. Whatever he got in that day, he'll cook that and eat it. That's it. That's how he was, right? So, and there was no ego in Tyagaraja. So therefore, he had no vanity, and therefore, it was not bothering him at all, making a living in this world, right? And they were able to live like that without that manam. What Krishna is saying there, amanitam. Without that manam, he was able to live in this world, right? Yoga Vasishtam says this, tapo vritti sammanat tu tapakshayaha. The tapasya, tapo vritti sammanat, that tapasya will bring this amanitam, and also whereas ahangaram will boost this the manam in a person, amanitvam, right? Now after this, the next one is adambitvam. Amanitvam, adambitvam. This adambitvam, these two things, amanitvam and adambitvam, if one can become free from that, then his success is very good in spiritual life, right? What is adambitvam? This adambitvam compared to amanitvam is a lot more subtleties. Adambitvam, right? Dambham means to show off to the world that I've got all these things, I'm this, I'm that, like people do in this world, right? Adambitvam. And manam everybody has. Manam. Manam everyone has got. As long as you are identifying with the body, you will have manam. Right? Dambham is somewhat special. More special than the... That's where it is more subtle. Dambham. Compared to amanitvam, compared to manam, absence of manam is amanitvam. Absence of dambham is adambitvam. So compared to manam, manam is a natural thing. Everybody has that. Right? Dambham is a special thing. Dambham means always wants to impress the world. I have got all these things. I am such a person. I am important in this world. This. And you can see that in people, that this is problem in a different way it comes in spiritual life, this dambham. We are not conscious of that. How others are observing these things, and we are not conscious of that. Just like they will try to impress you, they are always chanting. And I'm very absorbed in the chanting. And they will try to show you that I have no time, I'm a busy person. I'm a busy person, I'm chanting all the time. So, in other words, impressing others with their sadhana processes. Similarly, deity worship also. They will do in such a way that others should notice it, that they are doing the deity worship. So, deity worship is not a wrong thing. But then, the desire inside is, others should notice me as a devotee. I'm doing deity worship. I'm chanting always. And in this way, trying to impress the world, right? And they will also inquire what others think about themselves, what others talk about him, how far they accept him as a devotee. So, and accordingly, he will react with the world, right? So, he will dress up accordingly in the same way. So, in adhyatmam, in spiritual life also, in spiritual institutions also, you will see this dambham a lot of it, dambham, in the spiritual field also, right? So, normal people who are doing sadhana, in them also, this problem can come without their knowledge. This is due to conditioning. More subtle conditioning, that is, this dambham. That is why adambitvam, which is much more subtle than amanitvam, that, in other words, they are always very sensitive to the world outside. If the world will respect me, accordingly they will dress up. Depending upon if the world will dress up me, respect me for that, accordingly they will relate with the world. Their behavior will be like that, right? So basically there is no sincerity. Instead, showing to others, impressing others all the time, wants to impress the world, that's dambham. So these two things, amanitvam, adambitvam, two important ones, right? And if we have these two things, shanti won't be there. The mind won't be peaceful, right? And the world will make a monkey out of you. That's the nature of the world. Once you have these two things, manam and dambham, the world will make a monkey out of you, right? And we will be running our spiritual life on those things, based on that, those things, right? So, for example, Ekadashi day, sometimes people will fast, full fasting, right? And initially they were sincere, then somebody told them that, for Ekadashi I don't eat anything, he said. So he wants to show that he is doing better than others. This kind of mind, this is dambham. In order to show to others that I'm leading, actually these people don't understand anything. They are holding on to these kind of things. And this is among the devotees. Quite often you will notice this. They want to impress others that I'm fasting full day, I don't eat anything on Ekadashi. You have to tell everybody, the rest of the world should know that what you're doing, right? So, and similarly, that is dambham, right? So then others will talk about it, so and so, such and such a devotee, he doesn't eat anything for Ekadashi, you know. So naturally he is more advanced, obviously, in this way. So this dambham works like this, in different ways, in people it manifests in different people, right? So, Chandrasekhar Bharati, Sringari Acharya, he wrote about this, right? Impressing the world, to give them an impression that I am worthwhile being worshipable. I am worshipable. To give that impression to the world. This is dambham. Expects others to worship him. And he gives impression to others that I am worthwhile to be worshipable. right? So, and you display this in different ways in your dealing with the other devotees, right? So, first thing to realize is that when you come to spiritual life, to the spiritual field, the important thing is that not allow this ahankaram to build up further. Already ahankaram is a big problem. Ahankaram is jiva. Jiva is not different from ahankaram. And Krishna has spoken this very strongly in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Bhagavad Gita also, right? So, if you try to destroy ahankaram through the thinking process, through vichara margam, right? Another ahankaram will come up inside. This ahankaram is a very funny thing, how it works, right? It will start giving, this is a big problem, because when you start thinking that you have responsibility for so many others' spiritual life, like this guru-disciple thing, business, right? These disciples will put you on a very high pedestal and start worshipping you and give you the impression that you start thinking one day you are a very special person. This is how it happens. Actually, you don't have anything. All you are doing is that somehow or the other you have collected a few disciples and they got the impression that you are some very special person, important person in this world, right? And he slowly start getting the impression that I have come to this world to save so many people from this world. He himself is not able to save. And he wants to save so many others. Right? These are all dambham. This is all dambham. Nothing but dambham. And this, in the spiritual field, it's much more than in the material world. Material world you can understand because they don't know anything. But having come to spiritual world, if you are displaying these things, it shows that tattvajnanam is missing there. There is no proper tattvajnanam, right? So, he gives the impression that he has come to save those who are following him, right? And so, it is important, Krishna is saying there, that once you come to the spiritual field, these two things, amanitvam and adambitvam, they are very important qualities. If you don't allow them, both are difficult to control, and this ahankaram will come in different dresses. It will come, right? And that is also dambham. So, in strictly speaking, ahankaram's manifested forms are these two, manam and dambham. Manam and dambham are its manifested form, right? Amanitvam, adambitvam. So, how do you solve this problem then? That question comes, isn't it? How do I get rid of this? Everybody has it. How do you get rid of that? So, the easiest method and the most effective method is to be with someone who is realized, who is advanced and who is very realized, right? And Jivan Muktas or liberated souls or great yogis or jnanis or great devotees who have become free from all these things, right? If you get an opportunity to be with them and spend time with them, and then you will notice how they deal with you. They will crush your manam and they will crush your dambham. They will do a favor like that. That's a favor, they can do it for you. Right? So, great personalities, they won't tolerate this. Manam and dambham. Right? And if you are willing to listen, or if you are willing to surrender, then they will treat you. Otherwise, they will leave you. Suppose you get disturbed over that, your ego is hurt, then they will leave you, they won't say anything to you. But if you are willing to surrender, they know how to treat you, right? And they will not tolerate dambham, particularly, right? And they won't respect your ahankaram, manam or dambham, right? In the normal material world, in the material life, everyone in this world, they respect your ahankaram. This is the difference living in the society and living in spiritual life. Living in the society, you respect each other, ahankaram, respect each other, right? In fact, your father, mother, society, and all of them, they all respect your vanity. Your vanity has a value in front of them. Parents will respect your vanity, father, mother, and similarly, other family members. They respect your position, ahankaram, in this world, right? And and gradually that will strengthen the ahankaram inside. And so the only person who do not respect your ahankaram, who don't respect your manam or dambam, is the guru, spiritual master. He is the only one who will not respect your manam or dambam, right? So then you have to understand, guru means it is not a person. Guru is a tattvam. That tattvam, you have to understand how the guru tattvam operates in this world, right? And that guru tattvam can manifest through anyone. And they have respect for you to your swarupam, but they have no respect for your personality. This is guru tattvam. They have respect for your swarupam. Swarupam means they recognize that Krishna is inside you as Antaryami. So that is your swarupam. So they accept your swarupam, but they will not respect your personality, ahankaram. They will not respect that, right? So so that means to your personality, which is what called manam, dambham, they have no respect for that, right? And so they will play with your ahankaram, and they will play with your manam and dambham. They will play with that, right? So Narada Maharshi has done this. You can see that very often he has done this, right? So he is a personality like that. He knows who has this ahankaram strongly inside. He will get them to meet up together and make them to fight each other. He has done that so many times, right? Create a rift between, because he knows both of them have got terrible egos, so make them to fight each other. And he will make them to rub each other, and in that process, ahankaram will come down, right? For this purpose, he will visit Hiranyakashipu, he will visit Kamsa, and he will visit anybody for that matter. This is his way of doing that, right? So he will say what's happening here, he'll go and tell the other there. And what's happening there, he'll come and tell him here. In this way, bring them together to fight each other. So, and by creating this fight in this way, he will make them fight, and in that process their ahankaram will come down. So there are many, many examples of this. In different ways people have done this. People have done this. Especially you have to be very careful when you are dealing with personalities who are very realized and advanced in spiritual path, because they won't value your ahankaram. They won't respect you. And public generally have a feeling that they should be respected. And they want recognition from the... They are trying to please them, but it is the ahankaram who wants to get pleased. Same time when Ravana Maharshi was there in the Tirunamalai time, there was another yogi-like person, Seshadri Swamiji. He was living there. But he was a very mad cat nature he had. Won't respect anybody. And so advanced he was spiritually, in the sense, right? So one person, he wanted to please Seshadri Swamiji. And so he purchased a nice shawl to cover himself. Tirunamalai never gets so cold, but during the winter season, a little bit cold, so just a shawl is sufficient. So he purchased a nice shawl and gave it to Seshadri. And Seshadri took it. So Seshadri looked at him. Seshadri could see that he wanted a recognition from the shawl, what he bought for him, right? So what he did was, he got the shawl, then he cut it into pieces, so many pieces. And there was a bull standing there, and he tied the pieces of the shawl at different parts of the body of the bull and hung it up at the horns and on the ear and everywhere. He tied it with a rope, all different places, and the new, brand new shawl, what he gave it to him, he cut it into small, small pieces and tied it all around the bull. And everybody was a little bit shocked from what he did, what he saw. They went up to him and said to him, you know, he bought this shawl for you so that you could use it. But yes, yes, he said, I know, he has bought it for me. But more than that, I could see that he wanted to tell everyone else that I bought this shawl for me. So therefore, he wanted the rest, whole world to know. So I thought, Seshadri says to them, I thought that if I tie this shawl in pieces, the bull is wandering around everywhere and they will get to know that this shawl has Seshadri has given to the bull, which he has, was donated by this such and such a person. So more people in the world will come to know about it, he said. So this is how they are. They wanted to hurt you. Deliberately, Manam and Dambham will go in their association, right? So so the medicine for Manam, Dambham, everybody has to different degrees, right? But they are the main obstacles in spiritual path. You can't, this sadhana and all is nothing. Sadhana cannot help very much. You can see Krishna talks about these things, more about the subtle things than the gross things. People have this impression, I have done all my ritualistic activities and I will make spiritual progress. It won't happen. It is like, sadhana is just like this. If you take a bath in the morning, with the soap you wash your body, and similarly in the evening also if you take a shower and wash with your soap, sadhana is all, that's all it is. Sadhana means only that much. Nothing else is going to happen. Real thing is this amanitvam adambitvam. That's why they are powerful sadhanas Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita and to be taken very, very, very seriously. And that is its important. And that's where we will fail. It is difficult to get over these problems because we all know our problems. Every one of us knows our own problems, right? So they will, the only place where it will go is in the association of realized souls. If they get to see you and if you are willing to surrender to them, they know how to clean it up inside. So Krishna is saying, if these two things happen, amanitvam and adambitvam, if that goes away, to a large extent, you will become free from the grip of the body. You see? You otherwise not. We are not conscious how much body is having a grip on us. We are thinking everything is working according to my plan. No, it's not working. If you want to become free from the grip of this body, Krishna is saying, amanitvam, adambitvam is very, very important. Especially those two. Amanitvam and adambitvam, right? So, and a lot of problems, what we are facing in life, through this body, also will disappear with that. To a large extent, it will go, right? Many diseases what we get in the body is also due to that. And similarly, this manam, dambham, they are responsible. Ahangaram is responsible for many of the diseases what we get in this body, right? So, some people say that, you know, there is a general belief that people get diabetes. And this diabetes in this society is considered to be very respectful. Society, things like that. Because only rich people get diabetes because they eat very rich food and a lot of sugar, sweets and everything. So they get the diabetes. That's what the general belief is, right? In the society, right? And so this diabetes, because of that, people will feel that you have diabetes, and therefore a lot of that diabetes, according to Adhyatma Shastram, it is due to your psychology, the way your mind is situated, right? The ahangaram inside us, right? It has something to do with the illnesses what we get in our body also. So that is the point Krishna is stressing here. If you can free yourself from manam and dambham, then to an extent, right, because manam and dambham, they are the one which is connecting kshetram and kshetrajnam together. Ahangaram, isn't it? You know that in the fifth canto. That ahangaram is a link between chijjada grandhi and the jadam. Jadam is this body. Chijjada, the self, andaryami, inside. They are two linking together is through this Chijara Granthi. That Granthi, which is the link, which is Ahangaram, is manifestation is Manam and Dambham. So if Manam and Dambham goes away, what will happen is that link between the Chijara Granthi and which is between Jadam and the Antaryami will become loosened up. And that is how you feel the freedom from the body. You start feeling, your body becomes lighter. Body is not becoming a burden on you. You don't solve this problem by, you see, people think that if I reduce my physical weight, I will become lighter. That is not the way. That's a misunderstanding. You become lighter when you become free from the body, not by reducing the weight of the body. Reducing the weight of the body is a modern technique. They think that, oh, it is in shape and I've lost 20 kilos and I feel pride about that. That's not, and 20 kilos will come back within a few weeks again. For some time we'll be able to control that way. But the ideal thing is that if you can break away from the body, which is called the Chijara Granthi, which is nothing but this Dambham, Manam and Dambham, if that goes away from inside, then you will not feel the connection with the body so much, and therefore you will feel the body lighter. You'll feel the body lighter. Right. So, so these two things, Dambham, Manam and Dambham, one have to think oneself to do good for ourselves, for individually, right? And we have to do it on our own, and it has to be treated by ourselves, right? So, basically, one has to be sincere in spiritual life, right? 100% sincerity, and then only then all these things can happen, right? And most of the people, they come to spiritual life by seeing something. Seeing some people or seeing others, right? Just like some people saw a person, and after that, he started saying, oh, I met this, my guru, and he's a very friendly person. And I like him. So, if you come to spiritual life like that, you're gone. It won't last very long. It will not work also, right? So, because somebody you met, and you were impressed by that person, and you follow him in that way, and you start following him, and in that spiritual life will collapse after some time. It will not work. Spiritual life, you have to understand the principles behind it. What is actually what we have got problems inside? Amanitam, adambitam. Said Ramtirtha used to say about this. He said, Ramtirtha met Vivekananda Swamiji. They met, right? So, at that time, somebody was mentioned to Ramtirtha, look at the eyes of Vivekananda. How effulgent they are. How brilliant they are, they said to him, right? So, Ramtirtha told him, you following Vivekananda by seeing his eyes? He said to him, just by seeing his eyes, you are following him in that way. That's not the way to do, he said. And if you do like that, you will go and get into trouble later. So, and then he told a story about it. Ramtirtha spoke about the story. People like Ramtirtha, Vivekananda and all, they have knowledge inside, proper knowledge of spiritual life. So when they speak, they won't talk nonsense. Whereas general world, general society, people, they will see the beauty of a person, how charming he is, how charismatic he is. So many devotees talk like that, how their Guru Maharaj is so charismatic, and how learned, and how realized, this, that. Simply building up false understanding of things, and not they are themselves misled, and they are misleading others as well, with the same way, right? So, Ramadutta said a story about this situation that a sadhu, he went to take bhiksha, right? And one house he went and the lady gave some bhiksha. The lady of the house gave some bhiksha to him, right? And she observed the eyes of this sadhu, and said to the sadhu, your eyes are very beautiful. You look very beautiful, right? And when he said like that, Sadhu didn't say anything about it, because Sadhu knows that the eyes have, sometimes it will look good, sometimes it will look bad. So next day, somebody else brought this Sadhu there again, right? And what he did was, he took out both these eyes and put it on the plate. Took it out, both the eyes, and put it on the plate. And told the lady that, you know the eyes you spoke about yesterday that you wanted, liked it. Here are these eyes, you can have that, right? So if you start seeing the form, physical form of a person, or his manners, or what they call demeanor, and things like that, and those things are not particularly any sense from spiritual point of view. It is not making any sense at all, right? They are all your external personality outside to the world. And if you fall for those things, right, and one should never go into spiritual life seeing such things. That's one should be careful about. One should be careful about not to go into spiritual life with such understanding of the external charisma or the person's... because modern world is like that. Modern world is controlled by such things, right? So, just like I go to a doctor. Doctor is not look very good looking, right? But if he treats me and if he cures my disease, it doesn't matter how he looks, doesn't it? How he looks, it doesn't matter, right? So, on the other hand, there's another doctor who looks very young and very beautiful, good looking, right? And he can speak very well, but my disease doesn't get cured. So, should I go to that doctor or should I go to this doctor who can cure your disease? It's not. It's the same way in spiritual life. That simply seeing a person that he looks very beautiful and good looking and follow him thinking that he is the one for me to cure my spiritual problems, that's a misunderstanding. That's not how spiritual life is, right? So, the thing is that we know how serious the disease is in the body. Therefore, we will go to a doctor who can cure the disease. That's what matters. Not the looks of the doctor, right? Similarly, awareness that we have to do the right thing for ourselves, right? And we are in trouble because this manam, dambham, these two problems are there. And I want to become free from that. I want to find the shanti for that. And I want that perfection, sampurnata, in life. And with that understanding, if that awareness, bodham, has come to a person, and if you have that desire inside, then you will find the correct path. You will find the right path, right? You will be able to treat yourself, provided you have this awareness inside. If you have become really sincere and genuine in spiritual life, and if you are not any more bothered about the externalities and things like charisma and all that, rather realizing that I got this problem inside, manam dambham, I want to become free from that, and with that awareness, if you have gone and taken shelter of a mahatma like that, then his treatment will work and it will have its effect. So that treatment, you can do it yourself, manam and dambham, right? Provided you got to realize this, that you want to change yourself, this ahangaram, you have wanted to treat that yourself, and that realization has to come from within, from inside, right? So if you have that intense desire to become free from manam and dambham, then this will work. This process will work, right? So, nothing else to be done, right? One who has got his head caught fire, how he will look for water in the world? In the same way, one who is looking for the truth, one who wants self-realization, One wants to become free from the bodily grip of the body, body identity. Most of these qualities, what Krishna is talking about, or the bad things what we have in us, will leave us. It all depends on how genuine you are. If you are genuine, if you are serious, then these bad qualities, what Krishna is talking about, will leave us on its own. It will leave, right? So, that is why mumukshatvam is an important factor in this. That mumukshatvam is not there. If you do spiritual life for a show to impress others and to feel some kind of satisfaction in life, that won't do that. Mumukshatvam is important, he's saying here. If it is there, mumukshatvam means intense desire to become free from the clutches of this material existence, right? So, manam dambham, two things Krishna has spoken. Amanitvam adambitvam, ahimsa chandirarjavam, acharyopasanam shaujam, sthairyam atmavinigraha. So, amanitvam adambitvam, two things Krishna has put on the top of the list. Many other things he is going to say, but on the top of the list is these two things, amanitvam, adambitvam, right? So, if Krishna is saying there that if these two things gets reduced from inside, manam and dambham, then what will happen is, you will become very lighter person. Lighter in the sense that the body, you will get released from the grip of the body. You will feel released from the grip of the body, right? And that bodily affectation, bodily's impact on us will become loosened up. That's the way to do it. Bodily impact on us will become loosened up, right? So those two things, amanitvam, adambitvam. Then, so here he said, adambitvam sudharma pragadigaranam, dambitvam tad abhavam adambitvam. Always trying to impress the world by your various activities, and that way that is dambitvam, and destroying that dambham is adambitvam. Then the next one is ahimsa. Ahimsa ahimsanam praninam abhidanam chandi parabarada prapto avikriya arjavam hrujubhavam avakratvam. Ahimsa generally means that you don't give pain to anybody. And Yoga Sutram also, Patanjali Maharshi says that asuyadi vigaram abhavaha. That is how Patanjali says that. Asuyadi vigaram abhavaha. What that means is that feeling envy towards others for everything in life. Somebody has got more than me, or somebody is doing better than me, somebody is more famous than me. In this way thinking and suffering from that. That envy itself will hurt you inside, right? So, that means that you have hurt yourself with himsa. That is, you are hurting yourself, right? And that's what he's saying. Asuyadi vikaram. That kind of emotions. If asuya comes inside, envy comes inside, that itself is the violence, himsa, right? Sometimes you enjoy hurting others, giving pain to others, speaking to them rudely, and being violent towards them in your dealings, such things. But at the same time, you don't have the capacity to do it. But inside you're feeling very strong against someone, right? And then you're cursing him from inside. You're cursing that person from inside. So, such people who do like that, through their own himsa, they will release their himsa, violence towards others, and they won't do anything. But what happens is, when a lot of people think like that, develops this violent nature inside, it is burning inside, that, and if it happens in a huge number of people like that, at that time, all these himsavrati, what is present in so many people's mind, it will take a form in the form of a person and comes out in a society. And that's what all these great demons have come. Hitler, Stalin and all that is the product of this. that when you create in a society among people's mind a lot of violence nature in them and create that envy, violence builds up inside, and all that himsa vritti, they come together and come out in the material. These arrangements are in the prakriti. Prakriti will do it on its own. It will create a demoniac personality collecting all the violence and all the envy that they have created. It will come together into that person, and through him it will come out in the world. It will come out in the world. So that is how these persons like Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin and all these people, they, it comes in those forms. It is not that Hitler alone did everything. No, Hitler had all these force behind him to do that, right? So in the stula drishti means in the normal world, when you look at it, we will only see Hitler or Mussolini in the form, only we will see that. We won't see the subtle forces working behind those persons, right? In Krishna's eyes, right, they all have got the, in Krishna's eyes, they all have that their deposits there, right? And we have given, deposited with the prakriti. Material nature controls the world in a very strange way. We won't understand it most of the times, right? It is the same way, it is because of this only, different incarnations come. Incarnations come because of this, right? For example, rishis performed penances. When they see the world suffering from these problems, different people's nature changes, and more rajogunam tamogunam builds up in them, and they start acting very violent towards each other, and also that destructive nature grows inside. So rishis notices all these things, and for the sake of, and they know that they can't do anything about it. Who? The rishis know that. So they want to have some shanti inside, so that people can execute spiritual life, right? And they cannot do anything about it. So what they do, they go into tapas, they perform severe penances, and all the strength of all their penances come together and takes a form and comes in this world. And this is what you find in this world, right? That means the tapashakti, the power of that tapas comes out in the through some form. They are called the incarnations. Through some form, the power of all the penances they have performed, the rishis, it comes through this incarnation outside. It is in the Ramayanam. You can read that. Rama says there, the reason he was going to all the rishis in the forest, for this reason. He says there, he goes to every, Ramayanam specifically mentions this, that he goes to every rishi and he collects the tapashakti from them. Ramachandra collects the tapashakti from Bharadwaj, Atri, Vasishta, similarly Durvasav, and also Agastya, and many other great, great sages. So these sages, they perform tapas, austerity experiences, for this reason. And that tapashakti, the power of the tapas, comes through Ramachandra to this world. Through Ramachandra it comes to. We don't understand incarnations properly. We think though somebody has come, Krishna has come like this, there is a lot of rules working behind it, behind these incarnations, right? So you can see like that, that the, as I mentioned before, that Vivekananda also, before he went to Chicago to assemble the, to meet this World Parliament of Religions, right? And he was admired very much in that parliament. And he says that, whatever I did, there is nothing much to say about it, he said. It's not my strength, he said. Because before he went, what did he do? He went to all the places, holy places, met so many mahatmas who were busy in spiritual life and took their spiritual strength from them. And all that spiritual strength, what they have deposited in him, came out in Chicago through him. So, from Himalayas right up to Cape Comorin in Kanyakumari, and he went to all the ashrams of the great tapasvis who were Many of these places are unknown to us now. There are people in many remote places, in their ashrams, they live, and they are not known in this world. Today, media controls everything, isn't it? What media says is we take it so seriously. But and these people do not want to be in the media. They will stay away from the media. They execute their spiritual life seriously on their own. So there, Vivekananda says this, that they have deposited their tapasya in me. And that came out in the form of his lectures when he spoke in Chicago, right? And this, Vivekananda says this to Sharachandra Chakravarti about this, right? And so what they cannot do, the rishis cannot do on their own, it will come through one person like this. Sometimes what they cannot do individually on their own, all their tapasya will come together and it will manifest through one person in the way it has done, right? So, our mind, right, due to my weaknesses inside, right, when I have that, I have no right to ask somebody else that what's your problems like that, right? what is Krishna saying here about this ahimsa, right? So everything what happens in this world, even if it is not directly responsible, indirectly we are all responsible to it. Everything, right? Because world is me, in another sense, right? Even though I am not able to do anything in this world, right? If I can control my violent nature within me, then I have reformed myself. As I said yesterday, Rishi's method is not changing a whole society. It's not. They target on individuals. If individual can change, that will have its effect, benefit, right? So, and if it is done like that, individual basis, then the world will become Brahmamayam. So, that is the way they go. Suppose I have a violent nature in me, himsa, right? And if I am creating himsa, violence towards me, by being envious of others, others' wealth, others' position, name and fame, strength, all these kind of things, I am actually punishing myself, violence towards me, right? And in that way, I am punishing the world, because the world is me. World is me, right? So, and Krishna will say this in the Bhagavad Gita. If you look at the same chapter, 13th chapter, if you look at the verse 29, samam pashyanti sarvatra samavastita che ishwaram nahinna stiatman atmanam tato yadi parangadim. Verse 29. Yeah. Krishna is saying there that samam pashyahi sarvatra samavastitam ishwaram nahinna stiatman atmanam tato yadi parangadim. Only when one is able to develop this samabuddhi, right? And find the shandi inside through samabuddhi. You have to find the shandi through samabuddhi, right? Only then he is not violent towards himself. Otherwise he is creating violence towards himself, right? Suppose I am hating somebody, he may not know that I have hate towards him, but it will create an impact in me, in my system, digestive system, or blood pressure, or some other disturbance in my own mind due to that, right? So violence is like that. Violence is not only physical violence. If you have developed any of these problems like hate towards others, envy, pride, and all these things, every time you are applying violence towards yourself more than the person outside. You may have pride, you may have envy towards others, you may have ahankaram, and you may be thinking that I didn't show it to him, but inside me it is there. But so if such thoughts comes inside, violent thoughts towards someone else inside, actually you are punishing yourself. Krishna is saying that. Samam, what he is talking about. Samam pashyanhi sarvatra, samavastidam ishwaram, nahinyasti atman atmanam, tato yadi parangadim. That is important. Nahinyasti atman atmanam, tato yadi parangadim. When one is able to develop this samabuddhi inside, not getting disturbed, that samatvam, samatvam yogamuchyade, Krishna is saying there. Right? So, otherwise, where is this violence coming from? Violence, himsa, is nothing but a form of your ahankaram inside. If your ahankaram is very strong inside, it manifests in the form of himsa. It is coming from ahankaram. You can see that in the Bhagavatam, when Krishna mentioned that, how much importance Krishna has given to ahankaram. Ahankaram is where all the treatment is required. The soul doesn't need any treatment. Soul is independent. It's on its own, happy in its own way. But ahankaram, Krishna is saying there, that it is in the 29th chapter, I think. Shoka harsha bhaya krodha lobha moha sprahadaya ahankarasya drishyande janma mrityushchana atmana. Can't be more straight than that. Shokam harsham bhayam krodham lobham moham spriha. All of them are centered around ahankaram. And that ahankarasya drishyande, and it is this ahankaram also janma mrityushchana atmana. Birth and death is also for the ahankaram. So these are important things to know in spiritual life. What are we doing? What are we battling against? It is these things, right? And he mentioned there before also, edad vidvan madhididam jnana vijnana naipanam na nindadi na jastaudi loge charadi suryaval and pratyakshen animanina nigamena atmasambhida adyandava sahasnyatva nisanga uvichare diha. We have seen all those verses we discussed before. So, it is important. Atmaiva tadidam vishwam srijyate srijyati prabhu trayade trayadi vishwatma hriyade harati ishwara. All those verses Krishna saying this same thing. So, ahankarasya drishyande janma mrityushya atmana shokam harsham bhayam krotham lobham moham spriha. All these are emotions inside, comes up inside us. We may not display it to the world, but if it comes inside, Krishna is saying shokam harsham bhayam krotham lobham moham spriha. All of them is all part of that himsa inside. It is himsa. So himsa is not slaughtering animals in the slaughterhouses. That is in a gross level. That, of course, it is not right thing. But more than that, you are violent. If you create these violent emotions inside, you are torturing yourself. You have committed already violence. If any of those emotions comes inside, shoga harsha bhaya krodha lobha moham spriha, if any of those emotions comes inside, it is to be understood that you are a violent person. And if you have such emotions inside, after effect of that is, as Krishna is saying, that ahankaram will become stronger. Because ahankaram is the pivot on which all these things are working on. Right? So, that's what he is saying here. Nahinasya atman atmanam tato yadi parangadim. Atmana atmanam, mahinyasi atmana atmanam, right? So this himsa vritti, that himsa from inside, And where is it coming from? It's ahangaram only. Ahangaram's another form is this himsa, right? It is like this. A dog is on the street dog, right? It's sitting there. If another dog comes to its territory, he thinks that this is my area. You are not allowed to come, right? And you observe this dog, how he is reacting to the next dog who is coming there, right? And immediately he will start barking first. Without anything, he will jump on him and start barking at him, right? And this is what we are also doing in this world. It's not much different from that, is there? Right. Only thing is, we are not displaying it openly. We try to control as much as possible. But inside, all these emotions are coming, right? So Patanjali says in the Yoga Sutram that if one has become free from this ahangaram, then even wild animals will react in a way totally different. That now wild animals we are frightened about, and they will attack us if we go to them, right? And if you look at Mahatma's life, you will see this, right? So, you remember in the Charikan forest, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling from Bengal to Vrindavanam. That time in the forest, wild animals came to him and they were dancing with him, with the holy name. We think that, oh, it is all something, some kind of magic what he is able to do like that. And we will say Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, therefore it has happened. No, the way to understand that is, because this samatvam has come inside in a person, samatvam yoga muchyade, he is in that yoga state, therefore the animals don't think of him anymore as a threat towards their life. And therefore they are able to relate with him. This will happen. In many cases it has happened like that, right? So, there are stories about it. One great spiritual master, he lived in the forest, and when he lived in the cave and he was executing his penances, a tiger used to come and lie outside his cave and nobody could say anything. So the tiger never gave any trouble, right? And somebody brought a cow with a calf and gave it to this person, to this saint who was living in the cave, so that he could get his milk from that. So the cow was standing there, and when the tiger came, tiger didn't do anything to the cow. Just stayed, slept there, and the person who gave the cow in donation to this personality, he was frightened to come there because of the tiger. And he told him, no, you don't have to worry about it. He will not give any trouble to you, right? So this is what happens. That is what Krishna is saying in that. Nahyanyasya Atman Atmanam. That has come to that stage that such violence, ahimsa has completely left them, right? So, when the man came to see him who have given this cow, the tiger what was lying there, it opened its eyes, looked at him and closed its eyes and went back to sleep again. So, what happened now, right? Because in the presence of Mahatmas like that, animals change their cruel nature. Otherwise animal will attack anybody, right? So that himsa vritti, himsa, violence is not there among the Mahatmas, right? Temporarily in their presence, these animals feel like that. Animals feel a great shanti inside, and their violent nature leaves them from the animals. That violent nature in them leaves them. Brahmananda Swami, he had, he was the first disciple of Ramakrishna, Paramahamsa's first disciple, right? Very well known person. And Vivekananda and all had a lot of respect for him because of his position was like that. Spiritually, he was a very enlightened person, right? So, there is a story about him, very interesting story, right? Ramakrishna Mission started, and there was this, they had an ashram in Kashi, in Banaras, right? And there were so many brahmacharis there. And you know how they are, brahmacharis. There will always be argument and fight. I mean, the brahmacharis as well as the brahmacharinis. This happens, always, right? And the Swamiji, who was in charge of that ashram, told Brahmananda that in them days, you know, you could not communicate freely like the way it is now. Either you write a letter, or you personally go and see him and tell him. From Kashi, he wrote a letter to Brahmananda, who was in Calcutta that time. So, he's recommended that I am going to send off all these brahmacharis. It's useless. They're always arguing and fighting each other, right? And so, he wrote a letter like this. Brahmananda replied, saying that, don't do anything. Let me see them first. Let me come there. I'll come, try to come one day soon, and then I'll talk to them, see what they have got to say, right? So what he did was, Brahmananda came to Kashi, and every single day, he will invite all the brahmacharis to come and sit in front of him. He will sit there with them, right? So, after a few days, all these brahmacharis started behaving differently. They become more and more friendly to each other. And why did this happen? Because Brahmananda had no himsa, no violence in him, right? Himsa bhavam, that violent bhavam was not present in Brahmananda, and therefore, tal sannidho vairagyaha, in his sannidhi, in his presence, vairagyam had come to these brahmacharis, and anyone who is established in ahimsa, non-violence, right? In his presence, the others also, if they have enmity towards each other, their inimical feeling towards each other will also leave them. That is the power of this person. Brahmananda Swamiji's power was like that, right? So, himsa bhavam. That means, if you have to, as I said before, himsa is not only slaughtering animals and therefore we think that we are better than them. No. We, all of us, have this problem with ourselves, that feeling hate towards others or violent towards others, envy towards others. All Krishna mentioned there. Shogam, harsham, bhayam, krotham, lobham, moham, spriha, adaya, ahangarasya drishyande. It's all a symptom of that himsa inside, himsa nature inside us, right? So, himsa bhavam, if it has that himsa bhavam, that's called himsa bhavam, all these different things. If himsa bhavam has actually left a person, then in his presence, whoever goes there will also be affected by that. He will be affected by the person, that person who is free from the himsa bhavam. There are examples like this, as I mentioned, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's case in the Jharkhand forest. And there are many other stories in the same way, right? For example, if you look into this institution, what happened? During the time of independence, Gandhiji had to deal with... Gandhiji was very strong on this issue. Forget about all the politics side of it, because that is Maya. That is Maya's role. What is happening? How Gandhiji was trying to execute his spiritual life, how he was making progress. There is examples in his autobiography, if you look at it, right? So, they had, you know, British had the tea estates and coffee estates in so many places, Nilgiris, in Assam and all that, tea estates, coffee estates were there. And there were loads of people working there. You know, tea, they are very labor intensive, the tea estates, and loads of people. And that's how they came to different countries from Bihar and Uttar Pradesh and all that. They came to different parts in the Southern America and many other places. You find the Indian communities have come like this, mostly because of this tea estates, coffee estates, things like that. Right? So, in those jobs, in them days, They paid very little because that's how it was. That business was going on like that. So when we talk about Ahimsa, it is difficult not to mention Gandhiji's name. Not to mention that, right? So Gandhiji, there was some complaints from some estates that the labor, thousands of them working, they were not taken care properly, they were not paid well, and they were very much in difficulties in life. So they, that news came in the paper. In them days, everything, things comes in the paper, that's all, right? So, when they did all these things, and it came in the newspaper, the owner of the tea estate, he said that he thought that he's going to get implicated in all these things. He said, and they went up to him, the labor union or labor group of people who are running, you know, the labor has got organization, like the labor party, it is all together. So they went up to the management and told them that we have asked Gandhiji to come here to see the situation and to talk to you about it, he said. So the owner of the estate, he didn't like it, what they have done. So he said, if he comes here, I'll shoot him, he said. I'll kill him, he said. I'll shoot him down, he said. So somebody went and told Gandhiji about this, that this is what he is saying, that if you go there, and it will be very dangerous if you go and meet him, he's going to kill you, he said, right? And they even, when Gandhiji arrived in Assam, they even told him that you should not stay here because you could be killed. At that time, India was not independent, right? So, Gandhiji decided to go and see this person who said that he's going to kill him, right? So the next day, at the middle of the night, he went to this estate, the tea estate, and went and knocked at the door of the house where he was living, the estate manager, right? So this person who was owning the estate, he opened the door, and when he looked, Gandhiji standing outside, right outside the door, right? And Gandhiji told him, in a very pleasing way, told him, I have come on my own, he said, right? And I don't know how what you think about me, he said. In a very polite manner, he spoke to him, right? And if you want to kill me or anything, you can do it. I have no problem with that, he said. You open such a courage inside, Gandhiji is saying to him. If you want to kill me, you can kill me right now, right? But better to kill me now rather than killing in front of others, and because then it becomes another issue, right? So I thought that instead of doing in front of others, you can kill me right now. That's why I come on my own now, alone, he said, right? Without any fear, he spoke like this to this owner, proprietor of the estate, right? So, so when he spoke like this, this person, there was no himsa inside, no violence inside, right? To such an extent that courage inside, he was able to speak. So on that same night, he invited him inside, and his turn completely changed towards Gandhiji, seeing his courage to come and speak like this. That person was so affected by Gandhiji's manners and the way he spoke, it affected him to such an extent, right? And invited Gandhiji, and next day he took him around throughout the whole estate, and he promised him that whatever changes required in the community or the labor group, whatever necessary, he will change all that, what is need to be done, right? So Gandhiji managed to do it in this way, right? And he spoke very friendly to Gandhiji after seeing this attitude of Gandhiji, right? So this is practical behavior of a person who has practiced nonviolence inside. That is why he was able to, in the independence movement also, because of this only, it saved a lot of life. Otherwise, there is two schools of thought on this. Subhash Chandra Bose and others wanted physical fight with the British at that time. That was there, and therefore they were going to talk to Hitler and others, to the Japanese and all, and to build an army against the British army. That's one side. On the other side, Gandhiji's process was in this way. He tried to, through his spiritual strength, he was trying to do what he could, right? You can criticize Gandhiji, you can find faults in him, and all Mahatmas, when you look at them, you have to look at another side of that, everything. Because you see, when you look at Gandhiji, and people nowadays say about him that he was the whole problem, he didn't do the things right. You know very well that violence is not a solution to all the problems, right? You can see now between Israel and Palestine and all that. Violence will never come to finally solve any problems. Yeah. So, therefore, spiritual strength is this, that freedom from violence, freedom from himsa. And if a person has cultivated that strongly in life, in his presence, the other person will change. But you need to have that strength inside, right? Acharya Swamiji's life also, this has happened. Kapaligas wanted to kill him and wanted his head, because they are the people who perform the human sacrifices, Kapaligas, right? So they went up to him and told him, you look like a nice person, a Brahmana body and full of effulgence. We would like to offer your head in a sacrifice. Right? Acharya Swami told him, that's no problem. After all, if this body gives you some help, if it's of some use to you, why not, he said. But if you do it in front of others and all that, there are other people who are with me, they will protest. So you should come and see me at a time when nobody is there with me, he said. And he gave them a time. All these stories in the Shankaracharya book, you can read that, what happened. Right? So, they tried to kill him, but that's one. They took him and they were going to make sacrifice about with him. At that time, his close disciple, Padmabhadra, heard what was happening. He invoked Narasimham. Narasimhamurti manifested and killed the Kapaligas there. That is a famous story, it is. Padmabhadra, before he met Shankaracharya, he already had worshipped Narasimhamurti and pleased him. In other words, through Narasimha worship, he has reached perfection before, in the sense that he could get protection from Narasimha any time he wanted. It was that situation with him. So therefore, Narasimha Murthy protected Acharya Swamiji on prayers from Padmabhadra. That's a well-known story. It is in the Shankaravijayam. So, so the thing is, ahimsa, what Krishna is talking about, amanitvam adambitvam ahimsa. Ahimsa, one who is established in that properly, in his presence, hate will completely leave, go away from the other person's heart. Amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa. Three things Krishna has spoken. If you have got all the three fully established, then, and if you ask a question, suppose you have got all these three, amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, and if you ask a question that, if you have all these three, will the body won't have any problems then? If you ask that question, no, body will have problems. Problems will come for the body. Gandhiji also had problems with his body. Chandrasekhara Saraswati had problems with his body, right? And when they discussed each other, Gandhiji and Chandrasekhara Saraswati, they discussed in a village near Palghat town, Nelisheri, that village is still there, and that's where they had a meeting together. First time they met each other, Chandrasekhara Saraswati and Gandhiji, right? And what they were discussed to each other was not known to the world outside, right? But much later, Chandrasekhara Saraswati mentioned what was discussed. You see, these people, they are not, these Mahalmas, they are not seeking fame like in the world today. Everybody wants name and fame and followers, and it's like a big show going on, roadshow going on. Spiritual life has become like that. But in their times, they didn't do such things. They were all very inward-looking nature, very thoughtful people, and they were very conscious of what's good for the society, and they were well-versed in the Shastram as well. So therefore, their spiritual life was running on a different rails, right? Not like today. Today, everything is a display of your spiritual power and your followers, and you want to impress the world with your spiritual activities, things like that. This was not normal. This is not normal. It wasn't there like that. So, Chandrasekhara Saraswati talks about it much later to a writer when he asked this question, what was discussed. Otherwise, it was not spoken about it, right? So, he mentioned to him that Gandhiji was there, and what he was asking was this, he said. Gandhiji is not that learned like Chandrasekhara Saraswati is. Chandrasekhara Saraswati is a very learned person, because coming from that Vaidika tradition directly, right? So, he said that, Gandhiji told Chandrasekhara Saraswati, I have an intuition in my mind. It's an intuition, he said. What is that? Somebody is going to kill me, shoot me. This is closer to independence, not long ago. 1940 or something like that, 40, 45, something that period, right? Abraham Lincoln was shot down, wasn't it? Abraham Lincoln was killed. In the same way, he felt that when they are shooting, going to shoot me, I have a feeling like that. Gandhiji mentioned that, they're going to shoot me, right? But when they shoot me, Gandhiji says to Chandrasekhara Saraswati, I'm praying to you that you should bless me, that in my heart, I don't develop any hate or any dvesham inside my heart against him. This is what Gandhiji asked Chandrasekhara Saraswati about it, right? So, Chandrasekhara Saraswati's reply was like this. He said, if you have such a pure bhavam inside, in your mind, right, it will work, he said. It will happen that way, he said. And it happened exactly the same way. That when he was shot by the Godse that morning, when he went to the prayers in Delhi, he chanted the holy name and he left this world. Gandhiji left this world like that, right? So, ahimsa is like that. Mahalmas give importance to that. And they, because they have no dambam, no manam, therefore they follow ahimsa very rigidly. They are able to follow it. If you have, that is why Krishna is saying, manam and dambam are the two major ones. All other things, what he's going to say in the remaining few verses, next four or five verses, are all subservient to these two, manam and dambam. If manam dambam goes away, you can take it. Spiritually, you have gone very high. Very high. But if manam and dambam is there, all your sadhana, all your other things what you do in spiritual life is just like on the surface only. As I mentioned yesterday, you bathe in the morning with the soap, take a shower. Similarly, morning in the evening you take a shower. So your sadhana is only that much effective, not more than that. Yeah. So ahimsa. Mahatmas only can teach you these things. Ordinary people can't teach us how they have related each other. And what makes them Mahatma? Because of these qualifications inside. Not feeling any hate towards anyone. And able to relate with them in that way. That purity inside. The inside purity. Freedom from manam dambam. Right? So, because of these three things, manam, amanitvam, adambitvam, ahimsa, doesn't mean that they won't get sick. Their body will still get sick in spite of that, right? Because body, which is kshetram, is same for everybody.
whether you are a realized soul or whether you are conditioned soul. Body has to go through the its prarabdham. It has to happen, right? So when Maharshi got sick with cancer, right, he suffered heavily with the pain from the body, right? And when Ramakrishna Paramahamsa also got cancer, right? In other words, they also were getting sick, right? Narayana Guru also had problems, right? So those problems with the body, you can't do anything about it, right? And then what is their shelter then? The shelter is this, that the pain that they were experiencing the body, they were able to stay away from the body. That was their success, not getting affected by that. And that is why when Krishna started Bhagavad Gita, he is saying, spiritual life begins with that verse. Matras prashastu kaundeya, shidoshna sukadukhada, agam abhayino anityam, tam titiksha subharata. If that titiksha quality, Krishna is saying, is the most important thing in spiritual path. If titiksha is not there, then you have to develop it. There is no other way, Krishna says. It is an unusual power Krishna has given us all, titiksha. And if we do not take advantage of that, we are losing it. And when you lose that titiksha, that is when you become violent towards others and you want to control others and attack others and solve the problems, everything. And then you are thinking you are in spiritual life. It doesn't happen. Why did Krishna say that verse in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita itself? As soon as he opened the second chapter, when Krishna started the instructions, straight away he brings this first verse. Matras prashastu kaundeya shidosha sukadukhada, agam apayino anityam, tam tidiksha subharada. Tidiksha is a great quality. It's a great quality in spiritual life. Without that, there is no spiritual life practically. Right? So Krishna has given the solution in the beginning itself for this problem, right? Body is concerned, sukham, dukkham, happiness, distress is because what is Krishna saying? Sparsham. Sparsham, isn't it? Sukham, dukkham is sparsham. Sparsham means touch. Matra sparshastu kaundeya, he says. When material elements, heat or cold, when it touches us, sparsham, that's called sparsham. Then you feel happy. When the room is cold, we feel suffering. When the room is warm, also we feel suffering. Too warm it is. So you can see sparsham. Sparsham is that sense which affects our mind. And Krishna's answer is tam tidiksha subharada. Tidiksha, as much as possible, right? So, somebody complained about this to Maharshi. Maharshi said, when it comes from sparsham, he quoted this verse to him, what Krishna has said. Yeah. Sparsham, how it can happen, right? So then he said to him that you are not asking the same question when you are getting sukham. Only when dukham comes, you come and asking all questions. Isn't it? Sukham, dukham is shidam, like shidam mushnam, is two sides of the same coin. But why are we like this? As I mentioned before, that if you know in life that you are not very particular about sukham, then when dukham comes, you will be able to handle it. You will be able to face it. Provided you are not very particular about sukham. Whereas if you are very attached to sukham, bodily comforts, and all other comforts in life, if you are very attached to that, then when inconvenience comes in life, distress comes in life, dukkha comes in life, we will be affected heavily. So that is the principle behind that. Able to deal with sukham, dukkham with an equal mind. Yeah. So he asked, how do I become free from this problem? Somebody asked Maharshi. Maharshi's answer was, ask this question when you are happy, he said. That's how he said. Because they get tired of people like this coming and asking these kind of questions to them. Everybody thinks that they've got some magic solution to the problem. They don't have any magic solution. They can only tell you how to deal with it in a spiritual way. Spiritual solutions, right? So, he said to them that when the pain comes, you are asking, how do I get out of this? But when the pleasure comes, you are not asking the same question. When the pleasure comes, right? You are accepting everything happily. Oh, everything is good, right? So when sukham comes, you are accepting it without complaint. And when dukkham comes, you are resisting it very strongly, right? And who is doing that? That's this ahankaram inside. That's the ahankaram does that. Or this personality, or jiva, whatever we call it, right? So this desire inside, this is all how ahankaram works inside us. That is what Krishna is saying there. If you don't become free from ahankaram, spiritual progress is not possible. Shogam, harsham, bhayam, krotham, lobham, moham, spruhadaya, ahankarcha, drishyante, janma, murticha, atmana. Even birth and death is for ahankaram only. Right. So, so one who, when distress comes in life, right, one without complaints, able to tolerate it and accept it, right? And when happiness comes in life, if you remain indifferent to it, not affected by that, such a person, his personality or individuality will gradually crumble. His personality will crumble. One who is able to accept distress in life without complaints and able to tolerate it and accept it in that way, right? Similarly, when happiness comes, he remains indifferent to it, udasinan. Such a person, in him, his personality will gradually disappear. Personality means jiva, ahankaram, right? So that is why, you, like Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, in Vivekachudamani, Acharya Swamiji also said exactly the same thing. Sahanam sarvadukhanam, apratikara purvagam, chinda vilaparahidam, satidiksha idigadjade, right? So, whatever distress comes in life, sahanam, tolerate it, right? There is no other solution to it. There is no other solution. So, these are, normally in the world, we look for a solution straight away when some problem comes in life, right? Buddha also had a problem, similar problem, right? And similarly, Jesus Christ also, he was put on the cross, wasn't it? Right, even while leaving the world, look at the way how he spoke about it. Not with any hate towards anyone. So, any Mahalpas, if you look throughout the history, you will see this nature in them. Paramahamsa also that he used to cry because he used to worship Bhadrakali, was his famous deity he worshipped. Right, when his body was going through severe pain with illnesses, different things, right? And instead of complaining about it, or instead of developing any kind of hate towards anyone because of that, right? Similarly, when some happiness comes also, he accepted in the same way. So if we learn this science, what is that? That when distress comes in life, it can come from different sources. It can come from the world outside. It can come from other people. And you will blame them straight away. They are responsible for my suffering. I am suffering because of them. So, if we are able to accept all the difficulties or all the inconveniences thrown at us from the world and from other people, if you are able to accept it, and similarly, when happiness comes in life, sometimes happiness comes in life, isn't it? Sometimes. It comes. When it comes also, you are able to accept it without any attachment to it. In this way, if you practice like that, then you will transcend distress. That is the secret behind that. That's the secret behind that, right? Only when you transcend this happiness and distress, that's when you realize the presence of Antaryami inside. Atmanubhavam. Anubhavam of Antaryami comes at that moment, right? Outwardly, you may have distress, right? Pain, everything, suffering will be there. But if you have this tadalgmyam means identification with the body, if it is very strong, ahankaram will react very strongly. That is why they are saying this. Ahankaram is the connection between the body and the soul. That ahankaram, if you can somehow or the other loosen it up and make it less strong, then what is happening in the body won't affect you. It won't affect you, right? So, that is what Abhimanavrti or Ahankaravrti, it is called. And in that situation, the jiva will feel happier. Jiva will feel more happy at that time, right? So, that's why Vivekananda put it in another way. He says, there is deep ecstasy in pain, he said. There is deep ecstasy. Then, the next one. So, these three important ones. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa. Three of them, right? Then the next one is Kshandi. Kshandi. So, what is Kshandi? Kshandi means Kshandi means basically sahanam, tolerating nature, right? Then Arjavam. Arjavam means straightforward in dealing with others, right? Thinking one thing and saying something different. Or saying something and doing something different, that's not Arjavam. Hrijubhavam, it's called. Hrijubhavam is Arjavam, right? And Arjuna was known for Arjavam. Why Krishna loved Arjuna? Because of this. Arjavam, very straightforward, Arjuna was, right? So, Krishna is saying there that only one who is very straightforward, Arjavam, only to them Bhagavad Gita should be spoken to. People who are crooked, there's no point in saying to them Bhagavad Gita. It won't work for them. Arjavam is important, right? Ahimsa Chandir Arjavam, he says. So, what they say is that even if you associate with a very wicked person, right? But worse than that is, if you associate with a person who keeps one inside and speaks something outside. Totally, you know, conflicting way, behaving like that, right? You should never associate with such people, right? Why? Because there is no connection between his words, his mind, and his body. Three are acting independently. If they all work together, then you can trust that person. But all the three things are doing three different things. One says one thing, one speaks one thing, one does something different, and he thinks differently. So when all the three are different, the speech, the mind, and the body, when they are doing three different things, you can't trust that person, what he will do, right? So why? Because he has got conflict inside. That's why he is behaving that way, right? So, satyam, truthfulness means that what you feel inside, you should express it properly, right? And keeping something inside and saying something different outwardly, that is not hrijabuddhi. That's not straightforwardness. That means there is a conflict in the person inside, right? And so, look, in the world, what you will find mostly is this dealing, this double dealings, like that, right? Outwardly, they will smile at you, but inside there is something else going through that, right? This double personality inside, right? So, if you created a dual personality like that, saying one thing and doing something else, and thinking something different, right? What will happen is, you will be fighting inside yourself, there will be a lot of conflict within the person, right? So Arjuna was known for that. Rajabuddhi. Rajabuddhi means the straightforward nature, right? In order for these things to go, this arjavam to develop inside, Acharya Upasanam, that is what he is saying there. Chandi arjavam will come through Acharya Upasanam. Acharya Upasanam, Shaujam, Stairyam, Alpa Vinigraha, right? Acharya Upasanam, right? What does it mean? Acharya Upasana means that one who has realized the truth, Satya Darshi, right? People who have realized the self, in other words, and who have all these great qualities in them, Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam, who has mastered the Shuddhi and established in the Brahmam, and one who has compassion for others, and one who is able to take notice of our ahankaram and able to correct us, right? Their upasana, that is Acharya Upasana, upasana of such personalities, right? So basically, what is Acharya means? Acharya means that one who is our well-wisher. Well-wisher not in the material sense, in spiritual side. He wants us to advance spiritual life, right? He does not respect your ego, ahankaram, right? And one who is always looking what is hitam for you. Hitam means what will take you further, a step further in spiritual path, right? And to whom you can reveal your mind when you have a difficulty in life, that center is Acharya. Acharya means that center, right? So Acharya Upasana means, when Krishna using that word, Acharya Upasanam, right? He mentions there. Acharya Upasanam, Moksha Sadhana Upadeshtu, Acharyasya Shishrushadi Prayogena Sevanam. So, Sevanam of that Acharya, right? That is what he is referring to, right? So, he says that earlier, Acharya Upasana means it is a big thing in the sense you can have a physical service to somebody, doing some physical service, right? You'll get some benefit from that. But real Acharya Upasana is that these weaknesses in us, like Dambham, Manam, Darpam, Abhimanam, all this, what we are having inside, the problems inside, if you are able to spend time with him and able to remove those impurities from our heart, right, that is the best Upasana, Acharya Upasana. For that you have to have the association with the Acharya, right? At that time, when you get that association with that realized soul, he knows, Acharya knows how to treat the disease. He understands the problem, what we have got, and he will know how to treat the person, right? There are many examples for that. I'll give you one example. And these are all famous stories about different people, what happened, right? There was one person in Ramanashram, Ramakrishna was his name, and he will do a lot of service. By nature, he was like that. There are some people like that. They'll do a lot of physical service. Other things, they can't give any attention to it. They just don't have the capacity to listen to a satsangam and all is difficult for them. But they will do a lot of service, whatever you tell them to do. So this Ramakrishna, what he did was, at that time, there was no ashram like the way it is now. Yamana Maharshi didn't bother anything. He didn't want to establish ashram or anything. Because he knows it's all a waste of time. You open an institution, within a few years, it all become fighting for property and fighting for name and fame. As Krishna said before, Shastram is there, Yogam has gone. Yeah. You remember? Krishna says that, isn't it? Yeah. Shastram is there, Yogam has gone. It will become to that. So he is conscious of all these things. So he wouldn't bother to run an institution and to, he knows that which is not going to work at the end. In due course of time, it's only a question of time. Depending on the quality of the disciples who had come, how the institution will crumble very soon. They'll all fight each other for the property or for their power or for disciples or for controlling the institution. And in this way, the whole spiritual understanding will leave. But they will quote all the verses from the books. Shastram is there, but Yogam has gone. What is he saying? Yeah. Second chapter it is. You know that verse. Fourth chapter, I think. So principle is that. That's the principle. Yogam is the Yogam has gone, Shastram is there. It's an important verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that verse. And keep that verse and look at institutions and then you will see what's happening. Right? Yeah, what is the beginning? Evam parampara praptam. Sakalineha mahada yoga nashta parantava. He is saying. Krishna is saying this, so who else can say this? Yoga nashta parantava. He says, Yogam has gone. Right? And so from that we have to learn. We have to be a little bit thoughtful also about all these things. Not like the sheep who follow everybody or what everybody else is saying. Everybody is doing that, I'm also doing the same thing. That's not the way in spiritual life, right? We have to think, analyze things, what's it all based on. So that is why Bhagavad Gita is important, right? So this Ramakrishna, he did a lot of service. He was there and in the Maharshi didn't bother who was coming, going. If they come to him, he was doing what he had to do. He was in that state of, he will give instructions to people if they wanted to know something. Otherwise, there was no ashram like today. It was just a part of a forest, of a hill, end of that. There was a small hut in which he lived. And there were few people who were coming to him daily, who were serious about spiritual path. The good thing in them days was, people who came to him, they were serious people about spiritual life. In other words, they didn't want wealth, they didn't want name or fame or followers. They wanted proper guidance in spiritual path from him. So the people who associated with him were like that. All very, very, very simple nature, very simple habits. Not desiring for wealth, not desiring for anything else except self-realization. When you have people like that, that group will stay for some time. Otherwise it will not work. You need a proper environment for that, for spiritual life also. You can't run it like any other institution in this world. Anyway, what happened was, this Ramakrishna, he went into the town. Ashram is far away from the town. He went into the town and did something wrong there in the town. And the people in the town, they beat him up for what he did. Some nonsense he did there. Anyway, he did some nonsense and they beat him up, right? And when he came back to the ashram, the people in the ashram came to know about it, that this fellow was misbehaved outside, right? And so Ramakrishna thought that they all don't want me to stay here, even though he was doing a lot of service. So he goes to Maharshi and says to Maharshi, right, that they don't want me to stay here, they are causing problems for me. So Maharshi also came to know about it, that he has done some nonsense somewhere. So Maharshi told him, you stay with me here. You don't go out. Right? You stay here with me, he said. Right? After some time, some people who were coming to the ashram regularly, they came to see Maharshi. And that included some advocates, you know, the lawyers and all that. There were people who were practicing spiritual life outside. They were not living in the ashram. They were living at home. But they'll come to listen to Maharshi, what Maharshi had to say. And they'll consult him, ask questions and things like that. Right? So, they got to know about this, what happened. And they came back to the ashram. And they went to somebody was in charge of running this whole little show, right? And they said to the authorities that you should not keep Ramakrishna here anymore because he has created a bad name for all of us, right? And all people are talking about it. The ashram is like this. It's a bad name for the ashram. And you should be thrown out from the ashram. They all together, all these so-called educated, good people, supposed to be the good people, right? And he has been working in that ashram for quite a long time, doing different seva. Right? So, and then they came to know that Ramakrishna has gone to Maharshi, and Maharshi has told him to stay with him, don't go away. He stayed like that. So, and they didn't have the guts to go and tell Maharshi about it. They were fearful of him because they know they won't be able to argue with Maharshi. Maharshi says something, it will hit them very hard. So, so they were hesitant, thinking what to do. They don't want him there because they thought that outside world will think bad about us in the ashram, right? So what they did was, in a very diplomatic way, they found one person they selected to go and talk to Maharshi about this, right? So he went and told Maharshi that this Ramakrishna has gone and done something like this in the town. And the whole town is talking about this, what he has done. And if you keep him here, we will all get a bad name. And therefore, throw him out from the ashram. This man went and told Maharshi, we shouldn't keep him here, right? Or otherwise, you ask him to go and do some work somewhere else outside, right? So when they were saying all this, he was saying this to Maharshi, Ramakrishna was standing there. He was keeping his head down for what he has done, right? So, so Maharshi said something which was very eye-opener. He says to Ramakrishna, he says, Ramakrishna, you are very stupid, he said to him, right? The thing what you have done, right, you could not hide it from others. Right? And these people were coming and telling me they are also doing the same thing, but they are very clever. They can hide it from others. The difference is that you couldn't hide it. That is your stupidity. This is what Maharshi told him. So that's your stupidity, right? So when you live in a society, right, you also learn how in a clever way to hide things from the society. And to present to the society, you are a very gentleman. Whereas otherwise, you are also equally bad like anyone else. You've got the same vasanas inside, and you are also doing a lot of nonsense, but you can present it to the world in such a way that you are a gentleman. You don't do such things. So society's moral standard is like that. It doesn't mean much, the morality of the society. Mahalmas don't value society at all. Society is not important for them, individual matters. And what he said to them was that this has happened only because that reason is that Ramakrishna didn't get proper satsangam. Because of that this happened. And therefore, he does not know anything in life except to doing things. That's all he knows, right? So, when a part of your body becomes weak, or if it becomes, not usable anymore, it has become sick, what do? You don't beat him for becoming sick. What you do? You treat him and you cure him. Similarly, in Ramakrishna's case also, he said that there's no point in sending him away. Only thing is he'll be lost in that process, right? let him stay here and let him take the benefit of satsangam in that way. You should give him the opportunity for that. Only then he will understand what life is about, right? And wherever you find a compassion like that, this is a symptom of acharya. Acharya means like this. Compassion for others and with knowledge. With knowledge. So Maharshi was able to do it in this way. He did not throw him out from the ashram, which normally is done in other places, but Maharshi rather told him he should stay and take advantage and develop some proper understanding of life rather than becoming outcast and running away from there. So that is Acharya Upasana. We'll discuss it after the break.
Cheto darpanam arjanam bomaha davagni nirvavanam shreya kaidava chandriga vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandambudhi vardhanam pratipada purna amrita swadanam sarvapna subanam param vijayade shri krishna sankirtanam namnamakari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatrarpida nimida smaranena kala edadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi ജഗദീശ കാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരി ഭവദാൽ ഭക്തിരഹൈതുകി ത്വയി ഐ നന്ദതനുജ കിങ്കരം പതിതാമാം ശമേ ഭവാംബുദൗ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജ സ്ഥിര ധൂളി സദൃശം വിചിന്തയാ നയനം ഗലദശുധാരയ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകൈർനിജിതം ഗദാവഭൂ തവ മാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുഗായിദം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായിദം ശൂന്യായിദം ജഗൽ സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണ മേ അശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം പിനഷ്ടു മാം അദർശനാം മർമഹദാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദധാതുലം പടോ മൽപ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നൈവ നാപരാ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. So Acharya's great qualifications is this compassion, not to look at a jiva or he is finished, write him off from the list. That's not what Acharya is. Acharya means a person who has fallen down even to the greatest extent, able to bring him up from that conditions, right? That means it tremendous compassion they have to have towards jivas, right? And Acharyas also know our weaknesses. They know people who have got a lot of ego, ahankaram inside, and they have come to self-realization after going through all these things, before they have realized the truth, right? So, all weaknesses what we have, they have gone through all that. So, they are conscious of that, right? And these weaknesses in us, is in our sulam, sushmam, karanam, in all the three bodies. There is weaknesses, right? And unless we are able to clear up all the impurities in all the three bodies, gross body, subtle body and the causal body, right? We won't become perfect. And that may take several lifetimes before that happens, right? And it may not happen in this lifetime. And great personalities like Jnanis, they have a knowledge of the several bodies they have gone through. So that means their state of consciousness is different. Not like ours. We are only seeing the small limited period we are here now. And we are only conscious of the time what we have spent in this body. Whereas they are conscious of all the previous lives as well. Right? And that is the reason why they feel so much compassion. Because they are conscious of that. That the jiva has come to a particular body after going through several bodies. And they are aware of that, and so seriously, not on a theoretical level, but in their bodham, they are conscious of that, right? So, that is why this karunyam, compassion comes like this, from them. This compassion, reason behind that is
this, right? So there is to explain this more, there is a story about this in the Puranam, what it says like that, right? When Vasishtha came to this world first time, Brahma cursed him, Vasishtha, right? Brahma cursed him, right? And go and suffer everything, all the distress of the people in this world, right? And for a very short period of time, Vasishtha was a realized person, beginning. And in a short period of time, he suffered heavily, for a short period of time, all kinds of distress of this world, right? And then he is asking Lord Brahma, now you give me Upadesham, Brahma Upadesham. You give me Brahma Upadesham now, right? And then Brahma gives the Upadesham to him, Brahma Upadesham to Vasishtha, right? And then he says to him, now you go into the world and live in the world. He was the guru of the Solar dynasty, wasn't it? So, but Vasishtha, in his previous state, he did not know what material suffering means. What material suffering means. So therefore, if you send him in a perfect state like that, when you are in perfect state, right, he won't understand if he comes to this world what the problems are. So therefore, what Brahma did to him was, first exposed him to suffer, all the sufferings of this world, for a short period of time, and gave him a taste of that, and with that send him here, with that awareness, right? So, whereas if he was completely perfect, he won't know that, right? So, only if you have suffered, you will be able to deal with other people with compassion. Otherwise, you won't be able to. If you want to be compassionate to others, you have to know that why suffer, what suffering is, right? So then, he told him to go, and then he comes. Vasishtha comes to this world after that, right? So there are so many examples like this in the history of the Mahatmas. To understand their compassion, yeah? We won't understand it because our imperfections in us, right? If you read that book, Paul Brendan's book about Ravana Maharshi, you will see there he mentions this. He said that when I was preparing a lot of questions to ask, as usual, normally, right? You're going to see and you're going to fire questions one after the other. And I'll get all the answers. If he answers everything properly, then I will take seriously, otherwise not. So this is our modern approach is like that. People are like that, isn't it? They ask questions, and if you get the answer, then you think that he's okay. If he's not able to answer, then useless. That's approach. That's kind of approach. So he goes, Paul Brendan comes, and in his journey from Chennai to Tirunamalai, he was writing down in the train all the questions what he wants to ask. When he met Maharshi, he said, I didn't ask any questions after that. Whole thing changed. The impact was so strong in him that he met this person, doesn't need to answer my questions. All the questions he has forgotten completely to ask what he wanted to ask, right? So, important thing was, as soon as he met him, he said, Maharshi understood what was going through my mind, and the way he spoke, I understood that he has seen my inside, what's going on, right? And after that, I didn't feel anything to ask any questions further. So, just like a mother, when a child comes in front of her, suppose the child has become dirty, playing outside, right? Become dirty. What will the mother do? Mother won't complain anything. Mother will clean the child first. That's the same attitude from the acharyas, right? And mother naturally does her duty as her child. So she will pick up the child. And even if he has dirtied himself, she will clean up, whatever it may be, right? So that is why this Acharya Upasanam is important thing in spiritual life. We won't get that, right? Acharya's presence means, it's not that just being present, sitting next to them. That's not what means. Acharya Upasana means that able to change our life according to his instructions. Yeah? And one must try to do that. And that is Acharya Upasana, what he is saying here. Right? Acharya Upasana. So, what is required for that is Shravanam, proper Shravanam of the Acharya's instructions, right? And they are the best listeners, Shrogahu, right? And they are the people who are doing the proper Acharya Upasana. Physical service is good, bodily service, right? It will benefit, but that alone is not sufficient. If you get the association of Acharya, of a great personality like that, then you should take advantage of that, provided you get that opportunity. That's Krishna's arrangement, when one gets it or not, right? And if it is not available, then what do you do? It is at that time, they say that sadhana process, jnana sadhana or yoga sadhana, is important, more important than. In Bhakti Margam, Bhakti Yogam, right? Because the devotee is experiencing Krishna's presence, experiencing in the sense, is always conscious of Krishna. Therefore, even if the Acharya is not there, it doesn't matter so much. In bhakti, these things are not so rigorous, like in the Jnana Margam or in the Yoga Margam. But provided the bhakti is proper bhakti. If there is proper bhakti, then Antaryami himself will give him the direction, unlike in the Jnana Margam and the Yoga Margam. Right? So, suppose he is experiencing Krishna's presence all the time, that Krishna is there, and then link with Antaryami is there in him, then all these weaknesses will leave him without long delay. Without long delay, right? So, in other words, in Bhakti Margam, even if when he is conscious that Krishna is with him all the time, these weaknesses will not be a serious problem for in the process of bhakti, right? But provided he gets to develop proper bhakti in the heart first, right? Once he knows that, even in the chittam, that is the sushma buddhi also, that Krishna is controlling everything from inside, his thoughts, emotions, everything, right? And even that sushma, more subtle things even, will become properly guided from inside. It will become gradually purified, right? So, Bhakti Margam has got that benefit compared to, Bhakti Margam has got that benefit compared to Jnana Margam or Yoga Margam. In Jnana Margam and Yoga Margam, that problem is there. Acharya's service, Upasana is important in Jnana Margam and Yoga Margam. Bhakti Margam is not. Bhakti Margam has got a simple thing like that, right? So, in the Jnana Margam process, for example, in the sadhana process, in the Jnana Margam, or even the Yoga Margam, Acharya's presence is essential. Acharya's presence is essential, right? Which means Acharya's presence, salsangam with him, and sadhu sangam. And you need people who will correct you when you do something wrong, able to correct you at the right time, right? And people who will stop you from doing wrong things. Everything is required. And there you will have to surrender to that person. And this will not happen if you study a little bit of Bhagavad Gita here and there, or if you join an ashram. That's not enough in Jnana Margam and in the Yoga Margam, right? You will have to do these things. Study Bhagavad Gita. Alone you have to execute the sadhana. And these two things are secondary in Jnana Margam and in the Yoga Margam, right? On the other hand, more importance there is this connection with the Acharya in the Jnana Margam and in the Yoga, not in the Bhakti Margam. So all processes are different when it is managed in this way, right? In there, in Jnana Margam and in the Yoga Margam, you got to be with the Acharya. And also, you got to get a lot of time criticized and fired by the Acharya, right? And they will locate your weaknesses and faults and everything. And when they say to us our problems in spiritual life, we must have the humility to accept it without protesting against that, right? So, if you get that kind of training from or opportunity like that with Mahalpas for many years, they are very fortunate people. In spiritual life, they are very fortunate, right? So, to the extent the Mahalpas are very rigid or very critical of us and correct us, right? To that extent, you will become purified within, right? This is on one side. On the other hand, the Acharya also must have love for his the student, for the disciple, right? So if you get this opportunity of a satsangam like that with a guru in that way, one who can locate your weaknesses, and if you are willing to surrender to them, that's also an important thing, right? So that is proper Acharya Upasanam. So proper Acharya Upasanam is like that. You have someone who can guide you properly in spiritual path, and you are willing to surrender to that person. It's not something that you verbally discuss something, and that's not how it works, right? So. Sometimes, if you look into families also, that you will notice the father was very strict with the children, right? And you may think that the parents are very rigid or very strict with the children, right? And you may think that the parents have no love for the children. They have been very ruthless with the children. But these children, when they grow up, after say about 30, 40 years old, then they feel grateful to the parents for being so disciplinary in their childhood, right? And you can see that sometimes. They realize that how the parents dealt with them in their childhood and what has done good for them in life, right? And on the other side, there are parents who will supply everything what the child wants for material happiness, for sense gratification. And you may think that the parents look after their children so nicely, giving everything what they want, and keeping them happy through sense gratification. When they grow up and come to 30 or 40, they curse the parents. Exactly the other way. They curse the parents. Why? Because what they were looking for, the parents didn't give it to them. Looking for, in the sense, a jiva comes to this world looking for a shelter somewhere. And that is what spiritual life is basically. Spiritual life is not supplying everything what person wants for sense gratification and keeping him happy that way. That's not spiritual life. And that year those children who were given all the comforts and happiness in life through sense gratification in the early days, when they grow up by the age of 30, 35, 40 like that, they think of their parents that they were only destroying them in their life, right? So, just like some children, they will demand will go for the movie, will watch the television, will want all kinds of things, right? Or they want some vehicle, motorcycle or scooters or car or whatever it is, right? And if they ask for money, you give them as much money as they want, right? And in order that, for the children to make them, children always take advantage, right? They will ask, they say there's no harm in asking. If you get it, it's fine. If you don't get it also, it's fine. But there's no harm in asking. This is children's approach. Their mind is like that. You can't do anything about it, right? So, so they will ask whatever their mind and body is telling them. They must have seen something outside. Some other children enjoying something. So they also want to enjoy. The vasanas are there inside. They come with the vasana. It will start coming out. And they will demand something, right? But you have to notice this thing. Behind their mind and the body, there is that jiva there. And the jiva is looking for a place where it can get some control over its desires. Yeah? In other words, on his own he is not able to control his desires, right? So he is looking for some other, somebody else who can put some control over him and keep him under control, right? And this is what he is looking for. A jiva in his original jiva's nature, because jiva's situation you have to understand first. Jiva comes to this world with vasana. That's the first thing to know. And some of these vasanas could be very strong inside. And jiva cannot do it on his own. To control his own vasanas. He cannot do it on his own. So he's looking for some help from outside. Now the parents don't know all these things. Parents are thinking, my child should be happy. And he supplies everything what he wants, what the child wants. Trying to make it happy. And jiva realizes that this is not the way to go. He is trying to control himself. And he wants somebody to help him in that process. Right? And you see, desires are the biggest problem, isn't it? Once we built up desires inside, whole life is satisfying desires only, nothing else. What else are we doing in this world? Fulfilling the desires. Whatever desires comes, if we can fulfill it, we'll fulfill it. If we can't fulfill it, we will wait wherever, whenever it can get that, or keep that desire inside, right? So good father, or a one who understands all these things, he'll be careful with the child. He will only give you the essential things and teach him some austerity and penances in that way. And if one buys everything what he wants, because today's world, as you know very well, it's a consumer market. There is so much stuff in the shops which are tempting. People see all these things, advertisement, media, and the marketing, and all these things together, bombarding children with all that. And their desires, if they have desires inside, it gets worse with that, right? So the father who has brought everything for the child, right? And such a father who has done all these things, in due course of time, the children will abandon him. Because he feels he didn't get the help what he wanted. Jiva wants this. Jiva wants self-realization. Jiva is also, you see, you come to this world because of our actions before, what we have done. We got a body and we have come here. And while coming to the world, within us, the jiva is looking for an escape route from this. Nobody wants to be in this condition, birth after birth after birth after birth, doing the same thing, different types of bodies and suffering. So that is why Kapila Maharshi has teachings of the Sankhyam. He's talking about that, is it not? When the jiva is in the womb of the mother, what he is seeing there. So all that is in the background, behind all these things, right? So children who are brought up by parents like that, when they grow up, they will curse the parents. That they didn't get any help from the parents, right? So, and parents will say that I have given them all the facilities for the children, and look at what has happened. It has turned out like this, right? And they will be put in the old age home. At the end, they won't care to look after them, right? So, and but there is no feeling any connection with the children and the parents, right? So, on the other hand, you can also see this, right? Parents who are very strict in their dealings with the children, right? When the children, when they think about their parents, they consider that they were very fortunate to have such parents to guide them in life, right? So, because they did not give much for their body and the mind, sense gratification wise. And because of that, what happened? That jiva had some capacity to think independently and able to analyze life because you didn't supply them sense gratification. Because of that, right? And that is how a human being develops tapas, austerity, that strength of austerity. If you restrict the supply, the child will realize that what is poverty means in life, what shortage means in life. Whereas if everything comes very easily in life, he won't know the value of anything. He won't know the value of money. And he will also feel that everything is coming easily. And he won't feel anything. It is coming in my life. I'm enjoying it. That's the way he will take it. Whereas a child who has been given the understanding of realizing that that shortages of life and poverty, right? And that is the tapasya at that age for a child, right? What does tapasya mean? Tapasya means the capacity to go beyond the body and the mind. Beyond the body and the mind, right? And from wherever you can get that, that power to control the body and the mind in that way, you will feel gratitude at that time. That is the inner strength, spiritual strength. So for a child also, in childhood, if he has suffered heavily in different ways, he will know the value of all tapasya, value of tapasya, right? So, and that tapasya, what he comes like that, will come with the mercy of the acharya. That's what this Acharya Upasanam is talking about. Acharya Upasanam helps a person to develop this tapasya in a very simple way within oneself, right? So, so Acharya Upasana, what he is talking about here, is important in the sense if there is good Acharya Upasana, then this Amanitum, what Krishna has spoken, the first, it will develop in a certain level within him, right? Because Acharya won't allow him to develop Manam. He won't allow him to do that, right? Similarly, Adambitum also will come to him. Yeah. So, you have to understand this in a background of when this was all spoken. In Krishna's time, Gurukulams were there. And the system was running properly, which is not there anymore. Proper Gurukulams and the proper training for the children surrendering like that. Parents had total faith in that, right? So, in the ancient times, in Gurukulam, there will be children of the king studying there. And at the same time, and similarly, the child from a very poor Brahmana will also be there. In the same Gurukulam. Between the son of the king or the emperor and the son of the poorest Brahmana, both will be students, like Krishna's and Sudama's story. They studied in the same Gurukulam together, is it not? So you can understand from that, together they have to go for begging for the food, right? And they lived same way, both of them lived in the same way. And if the guru or the acharya sees any fault in them, he will point out to them straight away, right? So that is the benefit of that Gurukulam awesome training, Gurukulam training like that. Nowadays that's all being disturbed. It's not happening properly anywhere. And you know, I don't know whether it's there, but like our colleges and universities, everywhere there is a union now, students union, right? They come to school and college to study, and then the politicians come and involves. And all political parties have their own students group So what is going to happen now? What will come out of that, right? So, and there is no, nowadays students are fighting for their rights, they are saying. They come to study and now they want to, you know, exercise their rights, right? So that's all, that whole system has completely become like the way it is now, right? So that is Acharya Upasana. Then Shaucham. Krishna is talking about Shaucham. What does Shaucham mean? Shaucham means external cleanliness. Bahya Shaucham, right? That means keeping your body clean and keeping it Achamanam. And everybody used to have Achamanam before, that it was the water pot and the spoon, everything, right? And doing Achamanam was normal at homes, but Achyudaya Nama, Anandaya Nama, Govindaya Nama, reciting all the mantram, that's all a part of the Shaucham, right? And it is coming from Ayurveda, the Shaucham in this way, right? So, to some extent, water is the purifying force. Little bit of water goes inside, right? Then similarly bathing in the morning and evening, keeping the body clean, and as much as possible not to touch anyone. That is the Vedic standard. But now what do you do? As soon as you see a person hugging, this is not Vedic. This is how Vedic it is. It's not Vedic. As much as possible, you don't touch each other. That's the best thing to do, right? And this is all coming from the yogam, Ashtanga yogam also, right? So, Ashaucham, right? So, what yogis have practiced these things, right? It is not good one person touching the other, right? As much as possible not to touch. Asparsham, right? It is good. It's a part of Shaucham, right? And all great Mahalpas were like that, right? But then you will see in the Bhagavatam, Krishna comes to Dwarka and then all people were coming to him. He was shaking hands with them. So you should not take that as the right thing for us to do, ordinary people. Krishna has done for different reasons. He is Sachidananda Brahman. He never gets impure by touching anybody. It is there in the, if you look at the 13th chapter in the first canto, how he met with all the visitors, Dwaraka people, how he received them, and how they received him, and how he met with all kinds of people. All types of people. He was asking them in a different ways he dealt with them, right? So, similarly, Mahatmas, you will see what they use for their own personal personal life. They won't give it to others to use it. They won't allow, for example, mattresses, bed. They didn't use bed. They used to have some just a grass mat when they slept, right? And Narayana Guru says about this, that he had one, was in his sadhana stage, long before, right? And one of his relatives came to see him. And so, relative thought that Narayana Guru was not there in the room, he had gone outside somewhere. He took his mat, and he put it on the floor, and he started sleeping on that, right? So when he saw that, Narayana Guru took the mat and set fire to it. He says, I didn't like that. So, and he was a person who preached very strongly against caste system and untouchability. And that person has done this. Because he can understand from his thinking, right? So, this untouchability was a big problem at that time. Upper caste people, they won't even allow the lower class people to come closer to them, right? So, so untouchability means, what actually that means is that you are impure, I am pure. That's not what it means, right? Both of us are pure, right? Like, earth is pure, water is also pure. But when they come together, like man is good, woman is good. When they come together, there is problem. Isn't it? That's how in this world it is. Man on his own, they are good. Women also are good on their own. But when they come together, complications begin in the same way, right? So, not touching each other is considered to be good, shaucham, right? But it should not go to the extent like this, over the limit, thinking that you should not come so many meters close to me, you should stay away from me. This kind of things used to happen. It was very bad. It has gone to such bad situations, right? It should not be made as a law, in other words, right? And suppose you are traveling in a bus, can you tell everybody, look, don't touch me? And you can't impose things like that in the bus, right? So, and similarly, if you tell the mother, you should not touch the child, how is that possible? That's not possible, right? So, so that's not what it means. Shaucham means, as much as possible, maintain that purity. So, due to our prarabdham, due to that we will have certain vasanas inside. And due to that vasana, the body will act in a particular way. Due to our vasanas inside, right? And that movement, what happens to our body, right? That itself is a problem for us. Like some people, they have this vasana in them strongly that they have to hug you. If they don't hug you, they don't feel that they have not become very close to you. They feel that way. And they hug you, right? Devotees also do that. Seen that. And you start thinking, could that be better with not hugging? What's the necessity? I don't have to be so intimate in that way that I have to be hugged to express my happiness to seeing you. So, even when that is difficult, that our own vasanas are causing problems to us. Imagine when somebody else's vasanas also comes to you. So it gets more difficult, right? So this is all part of shaucham, right? Also includes the bathing four times. So then, this is all bahya shaucham, external shaucham. What about the shaucham inside? So, snanam manomala tyagaha, purifying the mind is internal shaucham, purifying the mind. So, the bathing and purifying this body, no matter how much you purify this body, it's not going to become pure. It won't get purified. Through these nine holes, different things are coming out. And you can see, even if you stay quietly, without doing anything, after a few hours, body becomes dirty. It requires cleaning, right? So, whereas the andarika shaucham, internal shaucham, right? Sandosham, arjavam, all these things will come from andarika shaucham. Sandosham, arjavam, shandi, arjavam, all these things are the results of the internal purity, inside purity, right? So, in order to keep the mind pure all the time, then Krishna is saying here, sthairyam. See the next one. You can see the rest of the things are not as strong, powerful as the first ones. Amanitvam, adambitvam is, and ahimsa. Those three things are the one, if we can get those things, then you make a big sweet leap in spiritual path. Amanitvam, adambitvam and ahimsa. Right. So, then sthairya means steadiness in life, steadfastness or steadiness in doing sadhana and all, very, you know, fixed up in the nishtha. That is called sthairya. Right. some people you can see in this world, they chant sometime when they are in a mood, they chant. When they are not in a mood, they don't chant. Right? And they are not particular, they don't feel, I was not in a good mood, so I didn't chant. This is there. approach, right? That's because of lack of conviction inside, proper understanding inside, right? So, and some people, they come, they take initiation, then they chant for 10, 15 days, and after that they say, it's not working for me. And then they go. You don't see them anymore after that. So many have come and gone like that, right? And even these 10 days when they've done, initially they did for 8 rounds. Some people do say like that, 4 rounds I'll do every day. Some people say 8 rounds. Somebody says 16. And in this way, so sometimes they'll say, today I can't do so many rounds. I'll do 1 or 2 rounds. And everybody is like different, right? So, so not being like that, that is a kind of avidya inside, ajnanam inside. So Patanjali Maharshi, in the Yoga Sutram, if you look, you will see, he uses one sutram there, and he says, dirgha kalam nairandaryam sadkara sevido drida bhumihi, Patanjali says. What does it mean? It means that dirgha kalam, you have to do it for a very long period of time. Nairandaryam. Nairandaryam means without any interruptions, right? And if you do that, eventually you will get established. Drida bhumi will happen to you, right? So, so when you do sadhana, first thing what you have to do is that you should not be thinking about the result. I am doing this sadhana, when is the result going to come? If you, that way, if you take sadhana, it won't work. So the after effect, you have to forget first, right? And now and then, you should not verify, is it working or is it working or not, with spiritual life. Yeah? And so, till you find this shelter in the sadhana process, whatever sadhana you have, willing to go, do it, right? Till you get that sadhana process, and once you have got it, right, then afterwards, your approach should be that, I don't want any results, I'm going to do it, I'm not even concerned about liberation, but I will do this till I leave this body. That determination is necessary. That is sthayiram. Sthayiram means that, right? So, and in order that in sadhana, if you want the benefit from the sadhana, right? Say for example, chanting the holy name, like 16 rounds or whatever that you have accepted, you could do that, right? And that should be done at any cost, day or night, it should be done, right? Under any circumstances, it should not be changed. And as much as possible, if we can do it in one place where you are normally accustomed to sitting there and doing that. So in this way, automatically doing at the proper time when you are able to do that, right? So in these things, our steadiness is important. And in our daily life also, that is called sthairyam. That Krishna uses that word sthairyam, right? Under any circumstances, you won't change that. You will stick to it. So in traditionally what people won't travel from home very far. Because if you go on traveling different places, this sthairyam is difficult, isn't it? Suppose you are living in one hotel here and one hotel there somewhere tomorrow. The whole year, this steadiness goes away. Because of this, traditionally, particularly Brahmanas, because they had to do Sandhya Vandanam, they had to do the Agni Adhanam and all that, what was prescribed for them as their duty, daily duties. Because they had to do 7 days a week and 24 hours, they have commitment, spiritual commitments. They won't leave home. Day after day after day, they will stick to their commitment, what they have to do. That nishtha in them. It is such an important thing. They and the temple where they were connected with and the family, that's their circle. They won't go travel anywhere else in order to make sure that they are able to perform their Sandhya Vandanam at the time and able to do other sadhana, upasana, whatever they were doing, right? So, otherwise what will happen? You will have to change everything. If you are traveling all the time, all places, and in different places, different facilities, and different rules apply, right? And you, what will happen to you at the end is, you won't be controlled by any rules anymore. You will start doing things everywhere based on time, place and circumstances. You start applying that rule, right? So steadiness is what Krishna is saying. And then he's saying that Atma Vinigraha, the last one, right? That means able to control the mind to do the sadhana. Atma Vinigraha, right? So that is what he is saying here. Atma Vinigraham, Ajari Swamiji says here, that Atma Vinigraha Atmana Apakarasya Atma Shabdovachasya Karya Karana Sanghadasya Vinigraha Sobhavena Sarvadaha Pravartasya Sanmarga Eva Nirodha Atma Vinigraha. Right? That means fixed up in the spiritual path, and both body and the senses, whole thing together is the Atma, and not to do anything that will upset this package together. And that is Atma Vinigraha. Atma Vinigraha. Sairyam Atma Vinigraha. Atma Vinigraha means to maintain this body, mind and senses, everything under certain control in such a way that it will not disturb your spiritual activities in that way. So that's where he said that. And then we go into the next verse. Indriyarteshu vairagyam anahankaramevacha janmam mrityujara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Indriyarteshu vairagyam anahankaram eva cha janmam mrityujara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Indriyarteshu means that shabdadishu drishta drishteshu bhogeshu viraga bhavo vairagyam anahangaram ahangara bhavam evacha. So what is vairagyam means? Vairagyam means that indriyarteshu vairagyam, our senses got used to certain sense gratification in life, right? Different kinds of sense gratification. And after sense gratification, you get attached to it. That's sense gratification. But if you are able to not to develop attachment, sense gratification happened already. But if the attachment has happened to sense gratification, that particular sense gratification, that will remain as a vasana inside. So if one is able to disconnect or asakti, if he is able to develop asakti, if he is able to destroy the asakti. Asakti, now there are two things. One is priyam, other one is asakti. What is the difference? These are technical words in the shastram used for this. Priyam means there is no attachment. You have love for somebody and you will do what is good for the other person. Priyam ends there. Asakti means you got attached to that person on a bodily platform and then you will go all the way out to please him because of this attachment. That is asakti. Asakti is not good. Priyam is right. Priyam is the word in the shastram, not asakti. So, therefore, he is saying here that the indriyarteshu vairagyam anahangaram evacham, and so bhoga vishayam, different sense gratification we may have had in the past, if you have no asakti there, that's vairagyam, and there is no ahangaram either. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Janma cha mrityu cha jara cha vyadhayaha cha dukkhani cha teshu janmandi dukkhandeshu pratyegam doshanu darshanam. One thinks about life like this, from birth to death. Right? Similarly, old age and the disease, this is what life is. That awareness all the time. That awareness all the time. From birth to death, Similarly, old age and disease. This is what life is all about in this world. Janmani garbhavasayo garbhavasayoni yoni dwaram nisaranam saranam doshaha tasya anudarshanam alochanam tatha mrityu doshanudarshanam tatha jarayam prajna shakti tejo nirodham doshanudarshanam paribhutata cha iti tatha vyadishu shiro rogadishu doshanudarshanam tatha dukkheshu adhyatma adhibhutadi deva nimitteshu. He is saying here that janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam, right? Normally people think old age, birth, death, old age and disease. We know all, we will always say that to everybody, isn't it? So, but staying in the womb of the mother and then the coming out from the womb, thinking about that, all the suffering, what as a, you see Maya, how powerful it is. We don't think about it at all. What happened? That's all over for us now. But Kapila Maharshi is saying to us about the jandu in the womb, what happens, isn't it? So thinking about that, the suffering we went through inside the womb of the mother, what was our condition then, and the suffering we experienced there, right? And thinking about that again and again, similarly death, and then all the problems of the old age, forgetfulness of different things, and then you get insulted by others when you get older. So those problems, and similarly all other diseases that comes for the body, in this way both adhyatmikam adhibhautikam, all those problems that comes, one should reflect on that. Athava dukkhani eva dosho dukkha doshaha tasya janmadishu purvavad anudarshanam dukkham janma dukkham mrityu dukkham jara dukkham vyadhaya dukkha nimittatvad janmadayo dukkham na puna surupena eva dukkham iti. So these distresses, these dukkham, one should notice that from the birth itself, what is happening to us, right? Jananam dukkham, birth is dukkham, death is dukkham, jara, old age is dukkham, vyadhi, diseases, also dukkham, right? And because the problem of all this, the reason behind all this problem says jananam. Because we took birth, therefore we have mrityu, jara, vyadhi. So these three things, jara, vyadhi and mrityu, is due to jananam. Isn't it? Because we took birth, jananam happened. Mrityu, jara and vyadhi had come. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Dashamaskandam, in Krishna's pastimes, if you look, you will see there that Krishna came, there's 4 or 5 verses about this Balalila. Krishna came and pinched the bum of the small baby sleeping there. And Sri Shukla Brahmarshi is saying there that why did Krishna do that? His answer was that Krishna has done that, why have you taken birth? That's your problem. Therefore you suffer, you come to suffer here anyway. So I'll add it to you, to that. He pinched that little bit. And mothers were complaining, the gopis were complaining. He not only came and stole the yogurt, butter, milk and other things. Apart from that, he went to the goshala and allowed all the cows and calves to go free. Let them free. So what happened? The calves were going and bringing the cows, milk. And you, if you allow them to do that, there won't be any milk left for you. So normally the calf will be kept separately and allowed to drink after you have milked the cow. But that thing didn't happen. So Krishna was doing everything what was not helpful for them. And added to that, they say in the Bhagavatam, it says that while leaving the home, after doing all that, he will go and the babies who are sleeping, he will go them and wake them up by pinching them on their bum, and then he will walk away from that. And the babies will wake up. And the gopis are saying they couldn't do their daily duties, because once the babies are woken up, then they had to look after the babies. So they were cursing Krishna and they were complaining all this to Yashoda Devi. One day they all came together and complained to Yashoda about this. Yeah. So the thing is that birth is the cause behind it. Why have I taken birth? And therefore, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, all the other things I have to go through. एवं जन्मादिषु दुःखदोषानुदर्शनात् देहेन्द्रिय विषय भोगेषु वैराग्यम् उपजायते तदा प्रत्येगात्मनि प्रवृत्ति करणानाम् आत्मदर्शनाय एवं ज्ञानहेतुत्वात् ज्ञानमुच्यते जन्मादि दुःखदोषानुदर्शनम्. आचार्य स्वामीजी सेइंग हियर दैट इफ वन इज गुड इन स्पिरिचुअल लाइफ व्हाट ही विल डू ही विल सी दीज प्रॉब्लम्स ऑफ लाइफ बर्थ डेथ ओल्ड एज एंड डिसीज राइट एंड ही विल विथड्रॉ हिमसेल्फ फ्रॉम द बॉडी फर्स्ट फ्रॉम द सेंसेस एंड सेंस ऑब्जेक्ट्स एंड ऑल्सो ही वॉन्ट बी अट्रैक्टेड टू द एंजॉइंग द रिजल्ट्स ऑफ हिज कर्म. That all comes from deep reflection of these problems of life, right? And he will develop vairagyam from all these things. What all? From the body, from the senses, from the sense objects, and also from the results of karma. He'll become withdrawn from these things, right? You see, karma is a big topic, right? We have to understand karma properly from the spiritual angle, what karma means, yeah? And karma sannyasam, when Krishna talks about that in the fourth chapter to Arjuna, he discusses karma very seriously there. And when you understand that, what Krishna has to say about karma, you completely change your understanding of this world. We come to this world with such a strong vasana inside. Nobody need to tell us that I have to do karma. I will go and do it without... That is what Krishna is saying to Arjuna also. Even if I try to stop you, you won't be able to stop. You will fight still because vasana is inside you. So how do I become free from that? And the problem with karma is that it creates karma vasana, which makes me to do karma further. And I go in this cycle non-stop, going through that. How to get out of this cycle? That's what Krishna is saying there, right? In that chapter, he discusses that in depth. So, because all these things, which one? Body, senses, sense objects, and the results of karma, what we are expecting, if we have vairagyam towards them, or indifference from them, then it will make a person more inward looking. Andarmukhatvam will come to him. And this is required for that. Vairagyam in these things. Body, and similarly senses, sense objects, and also results of the karma. If we have managed to withdraw ourselves from these things, and some vairagyam if we have created within, naturally, Ajari Swamiji is saying there, that you will become somewhat inward looking. Otherwise, mind will be in the world outside, right? So because of all these things, he says that this dukkha-dosha-darshanam, in birth, death, old age and disease, they are all responsible for spiritual knowledge in a person. Therefore, that is also called as jnanam, as knowledge, because they are responsible for jnanam. Yeah? So, after saying all this, you remember what Krishna said at the end? Egal jnanam idi proktam ajnanam tadananyatha. All this is jnanam, Krishna is saying. If you have all these things, there is knowledge in you. If you don't have any of these things, there is no knowledge in you. All your sadhana is not going to help. That's the way it is. Simply I am doing sadhana, it is all going to happen, it won't happen. Knowledge is necessary. The understanding what Krishna is saying. Edal jnanam idi proktam. Ajnanam tadananyatha. Everything else is ajnanam, Krishna is saying. Anything requires proper guidance from Krishna's instructions, isn't it? So, that's what this world, indriyartheshu vairagyam anahangaram evacha janma mrityu jaravyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam. Right? So, spiritual life means that to some extent come to realize that there is Krishna inside, at least to some degree. Right? Now, when we are very gross, right? We only see the body. We don't see that Krishna is inside, as Andaryami inside, right? So, basically, spiritual life means as much as your recognition of Krishna's presence in another body, That is your advancement. That is how you measure the advancement. The more you realize Krishna's presence in another body, that is a sign of your advancement. Not all the other things what you do. That's not. The real, you remember, Brahmane Pulkase Sene. What Krishna said at the end to Uddhava. Uddhava, if nothing else is possible, at least get this realization inside in your head. He said. Yeah. Samadrak Pandito Mada. That Samatvam, that Krishna is present in everyone as their Andaryami. If you are able to deal with other people with this recognition, there, if once you know that you are dealing with Krishna in another body, then automatically you will be careful about how you deal with that person. Is it not? There's no question of killing and fighting each other and all that goes away. Because you are dealing with Krishna is present in another body. Only body is different, but the consciousness inside is Krishna's presence inside, right? So Krishna said to Uddhava, Brahmane Pulkase Sene, Brahmanya Arke Spulingage, Akruro Kruraje Jeva, Samadrak Pandito Madha. Beautiful words. Very precise way Krishna, what he is expecting from everybody. Brahmane, Brahmana, qualified Brahmana, and a Pulkasa, one who belongs to that category of people, right? Totally opposite. What Brahmana's quality is totally opposite you find in them, Pulkasas. Stene, thief, one who is stealing things. Brahmane Pulkase Stene. Then, Brahmane Arke Spilling again. Sun, as well as the small spark of fire in all of them. Akrure, one who is very compassionate and kind. Krure, one who is very cruel to each other. In all of them, the vastu is one. Same. Just like, because Duryodhana behaved like that, doesn't mean, Krishna is there in Duryodhana also. Krishna is there in Kamsa also. Krishna is there in Hiranyakashipu also. So, when you look at Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa and all, it is Krishna who has come in that form. That's the way to look at it. Not to think that they are all the, we are all the goodies and they are all the baddies, like the way we segregate, isn't it? That's not the way how you study Puranam. So Puranams are saying that Brahmanyarke Spulingage Akruro Kruraje Jaiva Samadrik. That seeing the same Samam, Samam means Atma, present in everyone, he is learned. Krishna saying he is learned. Samadrik Panditomada. So on that same say, so that recognition of Krishna's presence in someone all the time, to some extent, of course, 100% won't happen easily, right? So, but at least to some extent, able to go inwards and realize that Krishna is inside, that realization, that is bhakti. That's bhakti, right? So, bhakti is a difficult thing to define properly, isn't it? Because different people understand bhakti in different ways, right? And Narada Bhakti Sutram, if you look, he says, Anirvachaniya Prema Surupam. That is how he defines bhakti. So, Surupam of bhakti is priyam. Priyam in a person. That is bhakti, right? And Tyagaraja Swamiji says like that. People asked him, what is bhakti? To Tyagaraja Swami, they asked Tyagaraja Swami, what is bhakti? Tyagaraja Swami says, I don't know what bhakti is. And in his Kirtanam, he writes these things. Telilez Rama Bhakti Margam. He says, I don't know what bhakti is, he says. To Ramachandra he is talking to. He says, I don't know what bhakti is. So he, you know how his Kirtanams have become so famous. And any concert without his Kirtanam is incomplete. To such an extent, that recognition of him, right? So, so what is the symptom of this bhakti? Sharanagati, surrender, right? So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita at the end Krishna is talking about sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarvapapebhyo mokshayishyami ma shucha. So when will this sharanagati happens in a jiva? When will that happen, right? With this ahangaram inside, he works very hard in this world to become successful, right? And he worked very hard and worked very hard and it did not work. Nothing happened at the end, right? And similarly, in spiritual life also, we have invested a lot of time and energy in our sadhana, in sadhana process, right? After trying very hard through sadhana process, he tried very hard to realize the self. Ultimately, he realizes that he is not able to do it on his own. It is at that point Sharanagati happens. Sharanagati happens at that time, not before that. Suppose I say to somebody, I'm going to do Sharanagati, and if I say like that, it means nothing. Sharanagati will only happen at the time after you have done all the sadhana, what you have capable of doing for a long period of time, you've done all that, and you finally you surrender that you cannot do anything about it. You're totally helpless, right? So Sharanagati is not something you do it. It happens. Surrender is not something you do it. It is something which happens in a person. It's not something you do it. It happens in a person. Right? So, Bhakti Sadhana, for example, we are doing Bhakti Sadhana, right? And whatever process what you are following, somebody is chanting, somebody is doing Kirtanam, or somebody is Shravanam, whatever Bhakti Sadhana one is doing, right? Whatever process he has chosen, right? And he is doing the sadhana. But whatever sadhana process it may be, bhakti is required in all of that. Krishna has not spoken in Bhagavad Gita bhakti as a special topic, separate process. He has not spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Bhagavad Gita has spoken about two parts only. One, Sankhyam, and the other one is Yogam. One is Sankhyam, other one is Yogam, right? Even Karma Yogam, he has, basically Karma Yogam and Sankhya Yogam. These is the two things Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, not Bhakti Yogam. I'll come to that in detail. Logesmin Dvida Nishta, Pura Prokta Mayanaga, Jnana Yogena Sankhyanam, Karma Yogena Yoginam. This is Bhagavad Gita's core process. Yeah? Nobody can change that. But unfortunately, a lot of commentators, after Acharya Swamiji's time, who have come, they have interpreted Bhagavad Gita in different ways. The result of that is, they haven't touched the core of the Bhagavad Gita's message. Krishna is saying to us, Logesmin, he begins himself, he is like this. Logesmin dvida nishta, pura prokta mayanaka, jnana yogena sankhyanam, karma yogena yoginam. Jnana yogam, karma yogam. And who is qualified for jnana yogam, who is qualified for karma yogam. Whole discussion is centered around this. And that is the core of Bhagavad Gita all the way through. So, jnana margam and karma margam. Why bhakti was not spoken specifically as a yoga process, right? Because bhakti is required in everything. Jnana margam won't become a jnana margam unless there is bhakti. Similarly, karma margam won't become a karma margam unless there is bhakti. You can see with the great jnanis, even like Maharshi and Paramahamsa, and also Acharya Swamiji and all that, they were all great devotees as well. Even though their process is jnana margam, how many sotrams he wrote for all the deities he has visited, Jagannatha Ashtagam, Panduranga Ashtagam, similarly Ashtagam in the when he went to Sriranga Ashtagam, Govinda Ashtagam, Achyuta Ashtagam, glorifying Krishna's all different manifestations in all the famous temples. Glorifying them, he wrote them. Similarly, he glorified Shiva in all the famous temples. Mallikarjuna Swami temple, Shivanandala Hari, he wrote. Similarly, he went to Jambageshwaram and wrote glorifying Mother, Sri Parvati. So like this, you can see, they were jnanis, they were high in their realizations, knowledge and realizations. But bhakti is required. Whether you are a jnani, whether you are a yogi, or whether you are a karma process you are following, right? So, so behind bhakti, there is this priyam, right? Bhakti is behind jnana margam and karma margam also. Behind that there is bhakti, right? So, what does that mean? Priyam means, it is difficult to define, like Narada Maharshi said, anirvachaniya prema swarupam. Something that your attachment to Krishna or Shiva, whom you are worshipping, right? So that is there, and bhakti basically means this, that priyam inside you, you have an attachment to that devata whom you are attached to, right? So that priyam, and that is called a bhakti. That priyam, what you have a genuine feeling inside towards Krishna or Ramchandra or to Shiva or to Parvati, whatever. A genuine attachment for that form, right? So, and that priyam, what we have, and that priyam, when it comes to a higher degree, that is called bhakti, experience life, right? So, bhakti, normally in the society, we will say so many things about bhakti. Different people will say different things, right? So just like chanting the holy name, it is nama sankirtanam, is bhakti, right? But that is all sadhana bhakti, right? Then there is sadhya bhakti. And then there is finally the ultimate goal, which is parabhakti. So there is sadhana bhakti, then there is sadhya bhakti, and then there is parabhakti, right? So if you look into Bhagavadam, you will see this spoken in the 11th canto, in the 3rd chapter, Navayogi Samvadam, where they are talking about this. Verse 31, if you look at it. Smaranda smarayandascha mito akhaugaharam harim bhaktya sanjadeya bhaktya vibrati ul pulagam tanyum. It says, bhaktya sanjadeya bhaktya. That's what he's saying there. Right? So, from one bhakti, another bhakti comes. What does it mean? Bhaktya sanjadeya bhaktya means from sadhana bhakti comes sadhya bhakti. And that sadhya bhakti comes para bhakti. So that is how the process works, right? So sadhana bhakti and sadhya bhakti, where is the difference there, right? In sadhana bhakti, Krishna is there, I am there, the devotee, right? And often what will happen is, right, you have that relationship, break happens. It's not permanent in sadhana bhakti. You understand that Krishna is there and you are the devotee. There is a relationship like that. But sometimes due to effect of maya, that relationship is forgotten. You don't remember Krishna. You get into busy with something else in life. So so that's called vichiti. Vichiti means break happens, interruptions happens, right? And you are not getting the experience of that relationship all the time, your relationship with Krishna, right? Now and then, your faith gets broken, gets disturbed. That is all in the sadhana stage, right? So, sadhana bhakti's nature is like that. The relationship is not permanent. Now and then, it gets broken. Suppose something happens to you or to the family members, you've forgotten Krishna, then you're busy with the doing other things. So it has broken that relationship, right? So, so therefore, Krishna is there, I am there. And this is all sadhana bhakti's symptoms. And then you will do your chanting the holy name, you will do your deity worship at home, and you are thinking about Krishna as a person separately from you. And in that way, whatever you are executing bhakti, that is sadhana bhakti. Keeping him separately from you. And now and then there is some relationship between him, right? So, that sadhana, when it goes further, when you go further, the next step, right? When you start realizing he is inside us as a Kshetrajna who is present inside, right? And when that realization comes to a person, initially it will be like this, sadhana only. Me, Krishna separate. me and Krishna separate initially. And that will go on for many long, many, many years of life in that way. When you start seeing that experience Krishna is inside, that realization when it comes to him, right, that means your attention has gone more than Krishna in the temple or Krishna in the deity at home. Instead, Krishna is Antaryami inside. At that time, you are seeing him as Kshetrajna, present inside, right? So, by seeing Krishna as a Kshetrajna alone is not enough, right? It's not enough. When you open your eyes and look at the world outside, the whole world, when you are seeing people all living as it is in this world, if you are able to see Krishna's presence in them, then he has come to Sadhya Bhakti. He has come to Sadhya Bhakti, right? And that is the stage what Bhagavatam calls it as Bhagavadottamam. Sarva Bhudeshu Yapashet Bhagavad Bhavam Atmana Bhudani Bhagavatesha Savai Bhagavadottama. He's saying like that, right? So by then he started recognizing Krishna's presence within himself and Krishna is present in others, all of them, right? And so by now what happened? Once you have come to that stage, that means that you have become Krishna's then. You are not relating with Krishna as a separate person. You know very well you belong to Krishna then. Because you are recognizing Krishna's presence in everyone, right? So we spoke about these qualities. Which one? Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shandir, Arjavam, Acharyobhashanam, Shaujam, Stairyam, Atma Vinigraha. 9 things were spoken in that verse. In that particular verse. 7th verse. Amanitvam, Adambitvam, Ahimsa, Shanti, Arjavam, Acharyobhasanam, Shaujam, Stairyam, Alpamanigraha. Total 9, right? So these 9 symptoms will be present in that person in a natural way. By now he has reached that stage. Once he start recognizing Kshetrajna inside, once he start realizing that Krishna is inside, always conscious of that, and he's also conscious that Krishna is controlling his life from inside. At the moment we don't have that, isn't it? We make decisions and we'll tell Krishna, I have decided like this. Whether you agree or not, that's up to you, but this is what I have decided. That's our current approach is like that. And whatever I've done, I made the decision and whatever has happened has happened. We may say to Krishna, you can help me if you want to help. That this is what I have decided, if I can get the results. That is a very Kanishtha approach, very basic stage, right? But once you come to this level, then what he is saying, these 9 qualities, what Krishna has spoken there in the 7th verse, it will be there present in him in a natural way. And so, by now, ahangaram has gone, come out of that person. That means he has gone a step further. Ahangaram has left him completely, right? And if the ahangaram leaves a person, sadhana becomes a lot easier. You know, because of this ahangaram only, we are finding it difficult to do the sadhana also. If ahangaram goes away, sadhana becomes a lot easier. Because ahangaram comes and put the spanner. Why you do all these things? Where is the guarantee that it will all work? Why shouldn't I enjoy life now? All kinds of thoughts will come from the ahangaram and the problem begins from that. So we will discuss this next Saturday. There's a lot more to say. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.